I call to order the fourth interactive dialogue of the General Assembly on harmony with nature. I would like to warmly welcome all of you to this meeting. This interactive dialogue is convened on the occasion of International Mother Earth Day in accordance with Resolution 68/216 of 20th December 2013. And aims to advance discussions on the promotion of a balanced integration of the economic, social, and environmental dimensions of sustainable development through harmony with nature. The same resolution also encourages giving appropriate consideration to the issue of harmony with nature in the elaboration of the post-2015 development agenda. Permit me to make a statement. Excellencies, the permanent representative of the plurinational state of Bolivia, Ambassador Laurenti Solis. Ms. Fischner.
Yes.
Good morning, madam.
Thank you.
Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, after the hardships of a particularly long and cold winter, it is my distinct pleasure to greet you in the dawn of a new season at this General Assembly debate on harmony with nature. We gather here today on this International Mother Earth Day to honor the planet that sustains and revitalizes us, to explore how to integrate the economic, social, and environmental dimensions of sustainable development, and to ensure that the profound and intricate connection between humankind and our home is duly reflected in the post-2015 development agenda. The history of civilization is a story of the sometimes complex relationship of human beings with nature and the planet. From the time man sought dominance and control over the environment, the quality of our lives as human beings has changed radically. While that change was largely positive, modern patterns of consumption and production have caused such over-exploitation of natural resources that there is a disequilibrium in the delicate balance of Earth's ecosystems. The evidence is that the current global population is using vast quantities of natural resources at so rapid a rate that we are consuming 50% more resources than the planet can provide. Consequently, today's lifestyles have ushered in what scientists are now calling the Anthropocene era. Essentially, this means that man's lifestyles, actions, technologies, and practices can and are irrevocably and adversely impacting nature, putting the survival of many species on the threat, undermining the survival prospects for current and future generations, and jeopardizing the very planet from which we take our life. We cannot and must not ignore the cries of our planet to restore a more harmonious relationship with nature. Nor must we lose the opportunity to work harmoniously with each other for the common good. Excellencies, nature is more than an economic resource. We cannot indefinitely extract infinite growth from a finite planet. A sustainable approach to development, one that is in harmony with the rhythms of nature, means that the needs and rights of the current generation do not encroach upon those of future generations. It also means that we must consciously and deliberately choose to evolve our purely human-centered worldview towards a more balanced, Earth-centered relationship with the planet. Under this new paradigm, nature is recognized as an equal partner with humankind, as well as a crucial ally. In other words, being in harmony with nature means both pro-planet and pro-people, and ordering the development of our societies towards sustaining nature, and by so doing, we sustain ourselves. Such a philosophy can contribute to the elaboration of the post-2015 Development Agenda, which seeks to eliminate extreme global poverty and forge a single development pathway that is truly sustainable. Many of the issues currently under consideration in the emergent framework reflect the need to restore a more harmonious relation between Earth and its inhabitants. In other words, the time has come for us to truly talk the talk and walk the walk. And whether we talk about agriculture, efficient use of natural resources, the protection of our forests and oceans, or the development of sustainable modes of production and consumption, we need to seek ways to reconcile the needs of people with the needs and capacities of our planet. We as a human family must now learn to respect the planetary boundaries and work towards forging a new and healthier relationship that will allow both to thrive. Distinguished delegates, as called for by Resolution 68216, today's dialogue occurs at a critical juncture in the planning for a new development agenda, and will examine how the issue of harmony with nature can inform and enrich this ongoing process. The panel of this dialogue is a fitting complement to the work undertaken by the Rio mandated processes to begin defining an agenda, which my team and I are doing our utmost to set the stage. I hope that the issues discussed here today relating to science, ecology, agriculture, law, policy, and planning will offer significant added value. Excellencies, sound policies and decision-making must be based on sound science. In formulating the post-2015 development agenda, it is important that member states and stakeholders rely on the most current scientific information. Our panelists today will share their academic expertise with us, highlighting the intrinsic links between economic, social, and environmental dimensions of sustainable development. The dialogue will also provide guidance for the further building of a knowledge network, the efforts of which will serve to produce this balanced paradigm for the planet and for people. The foundation of this knowledge network is the recently updated Harmony with Nature website, which also features the latest legal developments on the rights of nature, law, and policy. An extensive and in-depth bibliography of academic expertise focusing on Earth-centered relationship with nature instead of prevailing human-centered approach can also be found on the website. In addition to those previously mentioned, today's fourth dialogue on harmony with nature will allow participants to take stock of the four reports of the Secretary General, as well as the three previously held dialogues, begin the examination of appropriate strategies to operationalize and implement harmony with nature approaches, examine the policies, legal and institutional frameworks that must be put in place at the local, regional, and international levels for successful operationalization of harmony with nature approaches. Ladies and gentlemen, as a global population, we usually think of ourselves as being interconnected by the ability to reach every part of the globe through means of modern travel or by our ability through technology to know what is happening a continent away, as well as we know what is taking place in our own backyards. We laud the way in which the internet and social media allow us to communicate in real time, no matter where we are. We marvel at the rapidity and depth of the contagion of the recent financial crisis, which showed us the extent of our interconnections in a globalized economy. But we really pause to recognize that it is through nature that we are most connected with powerful and interwoven binds. Through the air we breathe, the water that sustains life on this earth, and the ozone layer which protects our biosphere. The sustainability of current and future generations depends on our living in harmony with each other and with nature. I look forward to hearing your views and encourage all delegations to take active part in this interactive give and take of ideas. May all your work have benefit for the people and our planet. I thank you. I now give the floor to the permanent representative of the plurinational state of Bolivia to the United Nations. Sasha?
Señor presidente, distinguidas delegados, distinguidos delegados, en primera instancia, permítame agradecerle esta nueva oportunidad que el Estado Plurinacional de Bolivia tiene, no solo para conmemorar junto a la comunidad internacional este 22 de abril como Día Internacional de la Madre Tierra, sino también para debatir diferentes enfoques alternativos del desarrollo sostenible, dando un paso más y discutiendo desde una perspectiva integral y no únicamente desde una perspectiva antropocéntrica. Es por esta razón que consideramos que el abordaje de este cuarto diálogo interactivo es encontrar el equilibrio entre las dimensiones económica, social y ambiental del desarrollo sostenible, equilibrio que llamaremos armonía con la naturaleza. Es inevitable no rememorar la resolución número 63/278 aprobada por la Asamblea General el año 2009, la cual reconoce a la Madre Tierra y sus ecosistemas como nuestro hogar, invitando en este entendido a crear conciencia global. Señor presidente, hace un año atrás nos encontrábamos en este mismo lugar debatiendo las necesidades económicas en cuanto a este paradigma. Hoy queremos resaltar la necesidad de aterrizar nuestros conceptos en las tres esferas componentes de todo sistema y la necesidad concreta de involucrar a las instituciones en el desafío en búsqueda de un vivir bien, aproximándonos a un mejor equilibrio del desarrollo sostenible para generaciones venideras. En este marco, el Estado Plurinacional de Bolivia, siguiendo la convicción de sus principios, la Declaración de Río sobre el Medio Ambiente y Desarrollo, el Programa 21 y el Plan para su ulterior ejecución, la Declaración de Johannesburgo sobre el Desarrollo Sostenible y el Plan de Acción de las Decisiones de la Cumbre Mundial sobre el Desarrollo Sostenible, avanzó en el reconocimiento de los derechos de la Madre Tierra y promulgó la Ley Marco de la Madre Tierra y Desarrollo Integral para Vivir Bien, misma que plantea establecer la visión y los fundamentos del desarrollo integral en armonía y equilibrio con la Madre Tierra. Esta normativa también recoge como objeto el de garantizar la continuidad de la capacidad de regeneración de los componentes y sistemas de vida de la Madre Tierra, recuperando y fortaleciendo los saberes locales y conocimientos ancestrales en el marco de la complementariedad de derechos, obligaciones y deberes, así como el desarrollo integral como medio para lograr el vivir bien, las bases para la planificación, gestión pública e inversiones y el marco institucional estratégico para su implementación. Dentro de los fines es importante resaltar la necesidad de trabajar tanto los lineamientos y principios que orienten el acceso a los componentes, zonas y sistemas de vida de nuestra Madre Tierra, así como los objetos del desarrollo integral que orienten la creación de las condiciones para transitar hacia un vivir bien de nuestros pueblos en armonía y equilibrio con la Madre Tierra a partir de la construcción de una sociedad justa, equitativa, solidaria y equilibrada. El Estado Plurinacional de Bolivia desea recalcar que el sentido operativo de esta decisión tomada el año 2009 por la comunidad internacional pasa necesariamente por orientar las leyes específicas, políticas, normas, estrategias, planes, programas y proyectos a través del desarrollo integral en armonía y equilibrio con la Madre Tierra. Señor Presidente, hacemos hincapié hoy sobre la necesidad, sobre la llamada economía verde. El Estado Plurinacional de Bolivia reitera su rechazo a este tipo y cualquier otro tipo de modelo que tenga como fin poner precio a las funciones ambientales de nuestra Madre Tierra, creando mercados en donde la naturaleza se comercializa. Ejemplo de esto son los mercados de carbono, que no frenaron la contaminación, todo lo contrario. Ahora las industrias de los países desarrollados prefieren comprar bonos de carbono en vez de disminuir sus emisiones. Bolivia ha dejado en claro su posición en la cláusula de reserva en el documento El futuro que queremos de Río Más 20. En este contexto, sentimos la necesidad de aclarar que ninguno de nuestros modelos de vida y aportes a nivel internacional en cuanto al vivir bien y armonía con la naturaleza deben ser tergiversados ni relacionados con conceptos antropocéntricos y depredadores. En este contexto, y siguiendo el mandato de la Resolución 68/216 de la Asamblea General, y con objetivo de avanzar en las deliberaciones sobre armonía con la naturaleza y a fin de promover una integración equilibrada de las dimensiones económica, social y ambiental del desarrollo sostenible, pueda contribuir en la elaboración de los Objetivos de Desarrollo Sostenible y la Agenda para el Desarrollo post-2015, Bolivia reitera las siguientes propuestas. 1. Agricultura y seguridad alimentaria con soberanía alimentaria, es decir, cero hambre en el mundo y ejercicio pleno del derecho humano a la alimentación, fortaleciendo la producción de alimentos sanos y saludables. 2. Patrones de consumo sustentable, reducir sustancialmente las pérdidas y el desperdicio de alimentos en la cadena de consumo, principalmente en los países desarrollados, y optimizar el uso de materias primas en la producción de bienes, promover estilos de vida basados en el consumo sustentable de bienes en el marco del vivir bien, mecanismos e instrumentos técnicos y legales que permitan el uso y aprovechamiento de recursos naturales en el marco de la restauración y regeneración de la naturaleza. 3. Patrones de producción no contaminantes, respetando la capacidad de regeneración de la Madre Tierra, producción saludable en el medio ambiente, la naturaleza y los pueblos, respetando los límites de regeneración de la naturaleza, contribuyendo a fortalecer y contribuir ecosistemas sustentables y garantizar la vida de la Madre Tierra. 4. Funciones ambientales de la naturaleza fortalecidas para lograr el desarrollo integral y sostenible, el fortalecimiento de las funciones y sistemas de vida de la Madre Tierra en el marco del aprovechamiento y manejo integral y sustentable de sus componentes. 5. Adaptación al cambio climático en el marco del desarrollo integral y la erradicación de la pobreza, que permita promover acciones para prevenir, disminuir las condiciones de riesgo y vulnerabilidad ante los desastres naturales e impactos del cambio climático, desarrollando capacidades de adaptación. La democratización de la tierra y accesos a medios y factores de emprendimientos económicos, erradicación de la pobreza, la exclusión y las brechas de ingreso, distribuyendo la riqueza y facilitando el acceso a los medios y factores de producción y de vida. El empleo digno para vivir bien en el marco del desarrollo integral, eliminación del desempleo y promoción de fuentes de trabajo dignos que permitan condiciones de vivir bien. Acceso universal a la educación, la salud, pleno acceso a sistemas de seguros de salud y a servicios de educación primaria, secundaria y universitaria. El acceso al agua, saneamiento, energía y comunicación y gestión integral del agua y las cuencas como un derecho humano. Cumplimiento del derecho humano al agua y al saneamiento, poblaciones que cuentan con cobertura universal de servicio de agua potable, saneamiento, energía y comunicación. Construcción de un sistema financiero mundial orientado al desarrollo y la erradicación de la pobreza. Dicho sistema financiero que se ha diversificado, democratizado y pluralizado, orientándose al desarrollo, la erradicación de la pobreza y la armonía con la naturaleza, promoviendo una regulación para evitar y prevenir la crisis. Señor Presidente, escuchando su intervención, permítame decir que Hemos llegado a un punto en la historia de nuestra especie en que no es solamente la ideología, no es solamente las opiniones de algunos, sino es la ciencia la que nos dice que el capitalismo está acabando con la madre tierra, que es el capitalismo el que afecta fundamentalmente los derechos humanos, los derechos más bien de la madre tierra y por ende los derechos humanos de todas y de todos. Señor presidente, por último, permítame expresar nuestra preocupación, pero al mismo tiempo nuestra esperanza de que el trabajo que tenemos por delante con la Agenda de Desarrollo post-2015 sea fructífero, positivo, de acuerdo a las nuevas realidades y desafíos de nuestros pueblos y gobiernos. Para ello, consideramos que el resultado de ese diálogo interactivo de armonía con la naturaleza es uno de los insumos más relevantes a tomarse en cuenta. Muchas gracias.
I thank the permanent representative of the Plurinational State of Bolivia for his statement. I now give the floor to the president and founder of the American Indian Law Alliance, Ms. Tanya Frischner, who is our representative of civil society. Madam.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. President. I would like to acknowledge you, Your Excellency John William Ash, and the Excellency Sasha Laurenti Solez, permanent representative of the Plurinational State of Bolivia to the United Nations. Your Excellencies, distinguished presenters, friends and relatives, in particular the International Indian Treaty Council. I bring you greetings on behalf of the Haudenosaunee Six Nations Iroquois Confederacy, North America, of which I am a citizen, and a message. Mother Earth is a relative, not a resource. I agree with you, Mr. President, when you said in your message, nature is more than an economic resource. As stated earlier, in 2009, the General Assembly proclaimed April 22nd as International Mother Earth Day. In so doing, member states acknowledged that the Earth and its ecosystems are our common home and expressed their conviction that it is necessary to promote harmony with nature in order to achieve a just balance among the economic, social, environmental needs of the present and future generations. The same year, the General Assembly adopted its first resolution on harmony with nature. The resolution expressed, and I quote, its concern over the documented environmental degradation and the negative impact on nature resulting from human activity. The fourth interactive dialogue is timed as the international community prepares to define a post-2015 development agenda. For indigenous peoples, this agenda must focus on sustaining the natural world rather than reducing it to a resource to feed the global economic system. The post-2015 agenda must include the full, effective, and equal participation of indigenous peoples in line with the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Recognizing the fourth interactive dialogue to advance discussions on economic approaches in the context of sustainable development and to further a more ethical basis for the relationship between humanity and the natural world is a positive step. Harmony with nature for indigenous peoples has been our worldview and the basis of our existence. We have always served as stewards of Mother Earth, and we share with humanity these beliefs, which serve as the basis of our life ways. We submit that humanity and the natural world are best served by the full and equal participation of indigenous peoples, women, and persons with disabilities, and recognizing their inherent right to self-determination and the principle of free, prior, and informed consent in the UN Development Agenda post-2015. The U.S. system, or beg your pardon, the UN system must ensure equity based on gender, youth, and persons with disabilities in the representation and organizing of all matters concerning them, including indigenous peoples at the local, national, regional, and international level. The harmony with nature discussion requires full and effective participation of indigenous peoples in all UN fora, as required under the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. This includes our inherent and inalienable right of self-determination, which is preeminent and a requirement for the realization of our rights. Mr. President, we recommend that states move towards full implementation of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and other international human rights instruments. As acknowledged in the future we want, the outcome document for Rio Plus 20, Mother Nature embodies a universal set of principles. This fact has always been recognized by Indigenous peoples. The natural law cannot be changed to suit humanity. The original instructions are clear. When water, air, and lands are all contaminated, humanity as we know it will be gone. Global industry and states must show good faith in restoring the lands and waters of indigenous peoples for all our children and for the seventh generation yet to arrive. Mr. President, again, Mother Earth is a relative, not a resource. For indigenous peoples, the cultural and spiritual dimension and relationship to the land is equally important. Our spirituality is distinct from Western concepts of religion, and our spirituality is our way of life. Our distinct and profound relationship with the natural world and our lands, territories, sky, and resources are of utmost value to us. Our relationships and responsibilities to our Mother Earth as Indigenous peoples and members of the human family cannot be understood apart from the fundamental relationship Indigenous peoples have with the land. This relationship with Mother Earth is inscribed in our own laws, traditions, and customs, as well as Article 26 of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Mr. President, we take seriously our responsibility to restore the health and integrity of the planet's ecosystems. Indigenous peoples collectively and individually recognize the sacredness of Mother Earth, the cosmos, all living things and elements that have sustained us. We call on the UN and member states to be mindful of the impact of space intervention and its impact on indigenous peoples' spiritual relationship with the universe. The report of the Secretary General on Harmony with Nature, paragraph 60, points to the sound scientific facts regarding the need to consider long-term impacts of human activities on Mother Earth. The economic approach to achieve harmony with nature must contain an ethical foundation, or the harm to humanity and the natural world will continue at its compounded pace. We must always consider the impact of our actions and decisions on the seventh generation yet to arrive. Recognizing that current economic models have failed to address some of the most pressing global issues, including global poverty, and recognizing that the current economic models have not leveled the playing field for indigenous peoples and other communities at risk, it is clear current economic models are not sustainable and should not be continually repeated and relied upon by all sectors of society. We note that environmental economists attempt to assign market values to the natural world in direct contrast to the worldviews of indigenous peoples. Mr. President, in our respective communities, indigenous peoples are unilaterally pursuing the removal of immense toxic waste from our lands, territories, and waters that have been left by the extractive industry. Indigenous peoples are determined to prevent the further contamination of our territories and waters. We draw upon the follow-up report on Indigenous peoples and the right to participate in decision-making with a focus on extractive industries. In many cases, industry and government regulators have refused to take responsibility for their contamination of Indigenous lands, territories, and waters, and must be held accountable for their actions. We further recommend that international industries, corporations, and business enterprises operating or seeking to operate in Indigenous territories endorse the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and operate in accordance with its principles. Mr. President, in closing, the responsibility and accountability of all global leaders in their daily deliberations and decision-making must include the effect on the seventh generation coming for all humanity. This is a major key to achieving harmony in nature and sustainability. Once again, Mother Earth is a relative, not a resource. Mr. President, thank you very much.
I thank Ms. Fisher for her statement. We have heard the last speaker in the opening segment. As members have been informed, this interactive dialogue also consists of a panel discussion and a closing segment to be held in this room. Participants are encouraged to use the opportunity during the panel discussion to pose questions and respond in an interactive manner to the comments and presentations made by panelists and other experts. The panel discussions, which will be moderated by Ms. Linda Sheehan, Executive Director of the Earth Law Center, will take place immediately following this opening segment. The closing segment will take place immediately thereafter. I would now like to invite the moderator and the panelists of the panel discussion to take their seats at this podium. The opening segment is now concluded.
Thank you and good morning. My name is Linda Sheehan, and I'm honored to be here today moderating this esteemed panel of experts. The panel is being viewed live via webcast at webtv.un.org. And to the almost 95,000 followers on the UN Sustainable Development Twitter feed, please use hashtag HWN2014 to weigh in during the course of these proceedings. You can also follow the proceedings on the Facebook page for the UN Sustainable Development Knowledge Platform. I'd like to begin by thanking the Plurinational State of Bolivia for sponsoring this important session. Notably, Bolivia was also the host in April 2010 for the World People's Conference on Climate Change and the Rights of Mother Earth. Out of this conference came the Universal Declaration on the Rights of Mother Earth, which provides for us today the language and structure of a potential Earth-centered governance approach, one that is truly in harmony with nature. The concept of harmony with nature reflects a non-anthropocentric approach to governance, one that is Earth-centered. Under today's human-centered governance approach, we've assumed incorrectly that we can avoid nature's rule of law and indefinitely expand material economic growth on a finite planet. As a result, we're witnessing fundamental and lasting degradation of the Earth's systems. To change course, we must accept our sense of well-being and tie it to nature and build our existence within nature's systems, rather than attempt to force nature to serve us. A new Earth-centered governance approach recognizes nature's rights to thrive, a recognition that benefits us all. The dialogue today will address key characteristics of this new Earth-centered approach to governance, as well as strategies for building it. We will be hearing now presentations on these topics from the panelists, after which we will turn to the floor for interventions. Our first speaker will be Dr. Frank Bierman. Dr. Bierman is a professor at VU University in Amsterdam, where he chairs the Environmental Policy Analysis Group at the Institute for Environmental Studies. He is also a visiting professor of Earth System Governance at Lund University in Sweden. Dr. Bierman specializes in the study of global environmental politics with emphasis on climate negotiations, UN reform, and global adaptation. His most recent book on Earth system governance will be released shortly by the MIT Press. He's won numerous awards for his path-breaking research on global environmental policy and holds PhD and master's degrees in political science and international law. Welcome, Dr. Bierman. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Linda. Mr. President, excellencies, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen, I'm grateful and honored to speak today to this highest body of the United Nations. In my view, issues of global environmental change and sustainable development belong to the foremost problems that need to be addressed in the 21st century. And for this reason, I'm excited to be able to participate in today's fourth dialogue of the General Assembly on Harmony with Nature to commemorate International Mother Earth Day. I'm speaking here as a member of the scientific community, and in particular, as a representative of the Earth System Governance Project, which is a global network of hundreds of social scientists all working together to advance our knowledge on institutions, governance, political processes from local to global levels. Our project's name, the Earth System Governance Project, reflects really a major paradigmatic change in our understanding. Today, we are no longer facing challenges that can be accurately described by the term environmental policy. Instead, we are faced with a fundamental transformation of core elements of the entire Earth system. As the science community has shown in numerous assessments, humankind has become a major force that influences key system parameters of our planet. And this is reflected in an ongoing discussion among geologists about whether the current period in the history of our planet should now receive a new name, the Anthropocene, named after the most dominant species on Earth, humankind. For this reason, social scientists working on environmental policy now increasingly use the term Earth System governance. Earth system governance is today one of the key challenges for policymakers and governments, and for the collective institutions that governments have created. Most prominently, it is a key challenge for the United Nations. Will the United Nations deliver? In the academic networks of political scientists and public policy scholars, much recent research has criticized the effectiveness of multilateral decision-making in the UN context and in the UN style. There are scholars who have declared the end of mega multilateralism. There are scholars who even advise to never attend any international diplomatic conference as an observer, but rather to visit instead the site events of NGOs, local government, civil society, because this is where the initiative, the energy, the enthusiasm, and eventually also the solutions lie. And to some extent, these critics may have a point. General global networks of cities, public-private partnerships, social movements, they are all important. They all can and they all should play a role. However, recent research has also shown that such activities cannot replace state action and multilateral institutions. And despite recent setbacks, there is all the sufficient evidence to show that multilateralism can work. As one example, multilateral cooperation has helped to phase out the emissions of chlorofluorocarbons and to protect the stratospheric ozone layer. However, even this success story shows one major shortcoming. It took over 20 years from the first diplomatic conferences to a largely effective international institutions on the ozone layer. In many other pressing issue areas, we do not have the time. For this reason, we need to engage in a process of serious reform of international governance and international institutions. We cannot resolve the problems of the 21st century with institutions that function with rules that essentially stem from the 19th century. We need transformation. We need to explore scientifically and politically new types of multilateralism. In early 2012, with a group of 33 leading social scientists, we published a paper in the journal Science on the reform of the institutional framework for sustainable development. Our main conclusion was that business as usual is not the way forward in sustainable development. Instead, we called for a constitutional moment in international relations and for fundamental reforms in the way in which negotiations and global policy processes are conducted. Ladies and gentlemen, let me give you three examples. First, research indicates that the decision-making rules in multilateral negotiations and in the UN system are largely outdated. They are not effective and generally not fair. For one, the consensus rule is still one of the key decision-making principles in many multilateral environmental agreements. In consensus-based systems, each country has a veto. Any decision depends on the interest of the least interested government. This is not an effective way to make progress. Our research suggests that majority voting can speed up decisions. We do not argue that every decision must be taken by majority. Yet the more majority-based decision-making is accepted, the better for speedy decisions with sufficient force. And such decisions is what our planet urgently needs. But majority voting is determined, of course, by the weight of the votes that each country can hold and by the kind of majorities that are needed. In the United Nations of today, the one country, one vote approach gives, in theory, an absolute majority of votes to a theoretical coalition of countries that represent roughly 5% of global population. This underrepresents the millions of people who live in countries with large populations. Alternatives to this, however, also come as problems. Suppose the votes of countries would be weighted by the size of their population. An absolute majority would then be held by a theoretical coalition of merely 7 countries. The remaining 186 countries together would hold less than 50% of the votes. Again, many countries will have problems with such weighting of votes as well. Some might argue that economic strengths and financial contributions of countries could be weighted in decision-making. Obviously, however, this would come with similar problems of lack of acceptance by many countries. Others, again, might argue for regional seats. Yet, what would be these regions?
Do we have clear and stable regional groupings of countries and interests in all parts of the world useful for all issue domains? Compromises and innovative ideas are needed that generate support for a new type of multilateralism. We could think about different majority and voting rules for different issue areas. We can think about multiple, complex, combined, or layered majorities. And surely, we need to clearly define institutional guarantees that protect smaller countries. A second area of much-needed reform is the accountability of global decision-making. We have experienced over the last years an increase in global governance. New institutions were created, and old ones have gained new power. The stronger role for intergovernmental institutions raises problems of relating back to citizens. Citizens lack knowledge about what happens in New York or in Geneva, an anonymous institution that are difficult to understand for citizens, difficult to follow, and thus difficult to support. A democratic deficit of the UN bureaucracy is felt in many parts of the world. When we want to strengthen the United Nations in order to help with our overarching goal of planetary stewardship, we have to address this potential lack of trust or understanding among our citizens. One way is to better include the voice of citizens in UN processes. This is being done already to some extent, and we clearly have moved forward from the secret diplomacy of the 19th century. This event today, with non-governmental stakeholders being invited to the podium, is a very good example among many others. Yet to really interlink global decisions with local trust and accountability, more steps are needed. In the academic community, numerous proposals are being discussed. Some scholars argue for global deliberative assemblies of cities of all countries and regions. Others call for a parliamentary assembly as a second chamber in the UN system, bringing in the direct representatives of the people. Others, again, argue for upgrading the major groups in the UN system through a forum of civil society organizations, also possibly as a second or as a third chamber that would represent global civil society. There are many advantages and disadvantages of all of these proposals, and I cannot go into these details here today. But I am truly convinced that if we want to have more effective global governance of sustainable development, there is an urgent need to address the current legitimacy and accountability deficit in global institutions. Third, there is no doubt that equity and fairness must be at the heart of a durable international framework for sustainable development. There is no country in the world where wealth is so unequally divided as on this planet as a whole. 842 million people do not have sufficient food. Planetary stewardship and Earth system governance, to be effective, they need to operate in this context. To this end, our policy reports argue clearly that financial support of poorer countries remains essential. More substantial financial resources could be made available, for example, through novel financial mechanisms such as global emissions markets or air transportation levies for sustainability purposes. Distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen, the world saw a major transformative shift in governance after 1945 that led to the establishment of the United Nations and numerous other international organizations, along with far-reaching new international legal norms on human rights and economic cooperation. We need similar changes today, a constitutional moment in global governance on behalf of our stewardship for our planet. Such a reform of the intergovernmental system will not be the only level of societal change, nor the only type of action that is needed towards sustainability. Changes in the behavior of citizens, in societies, new engagement of civil society organizations, and reorientation of the private sector towards a sustainable economy, this is all crucial to achieve progress. Yet, in order for local and national action to be effective, the global institutional framework must be supportive and well-designed. New policies and new ideas are needed. Let us start to break new ground. Let us engage in a process of renewing our global institutions. The social science community is ready to engage with governments and with the UN system to assist in generating these new ideas. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you for your remarks, Dr. Bierman. Our second speaker is Dr. Barbara Badeau. Dr. Badeau is founder and president of the Triglav Circle, an international NGO with ECOSOC status comprised of scholars and professionals who work to enrich policy discussions with philosophical, moral, and spiritual insights. She is also a professor and chair of the Politics Department of St. Anselm's College, where she teaches international relations and environmental politics. Among other publications, Dr. Badeau wrote an article, Approaching Harmony with Nature, that was published in Future Perfect for the Rio Plus20 conference. She received her master's and PhD from Tufts University and has served the UN as an economics officer in New York and Geneva. Welcome, Dr. Badeau.
Thank you very much, Madam Moderator. I wish to give special thanks to Ambassador Sasha Llorente and, in particular, the plurinational state of Bolivia for sponsoring this event and for their leadership on this issue. I wish also to thank the organizer of this event, the President of the General Assembly, Ambassador John W. Ash, and his office. It is a privilege to be invited to address this fourth session of the Interactive Dialogue of the General Assembly on Harmony with Nature. Permit me, please, ladies and gentlemen, to preface my remarks by recalling two facts. First, in nearly half a century since the Stockholm Conference put the human environment on the international agenda, the main indicators of the health of the planet, the health of planet Earth, show continuing deterioration. There is no need to insist on this alarming fact. Reports such as those of the United Nations Environment Program and the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change are sufficiently eloquent. Second, it is the word environment and not the word nature which is overwhelmingly used in debates and texts of the international community in respect to Mother Earth. From Stockholm to Rio Plus 20, the word nature is virtually absent from the international discourse on the strategies for limiting damage to the environment. And this is not simply a matter of semantics. Suffice to note the token roles in the international discourse on sustainable development played by the World Charter of Nature and the Universal Declaration of the Rights of Mother Earth. It is my contention that the neglect of nature as such is at the core of many problems we are confronted with. A shift of our attention to give greater heed to nature, per se, in our policies and actions would give humankind a better chance at survival. Let me make two points in support of these convictions. First, there are two worldviews, one focused on the environment and the other on nature. This distinction is at the heart of our problems today. Second, to approach harmony with nature, it is imperative to consult other sources of knowledge in addition to the physical and social sciences, monopolizing the present discourse on the environment. I trust we all agree that thoughts and ideas are the building blocks of society. The emotions they articulate, the attitudes they project, and the desires they embody define the spirit of our time, even the perception of nature in our age. Thus, it is necessary to reflect on the significance of intellectual and spiritual resources as essential elements of social change. Given these assumptions, I will distinguish first the two approaches to nature, both of which have been evident at least since the 18th century. The first view is nature identified with the human environment. This is the dominant worldview. It puts a premium on material progress made possible by the extraordinary achievements of science and its technological innovations and applications. It institutionalizes a model of the good life, the good material life, that is centrally based on economic development and the measuring of its success in quantitative terms, in particular, gross national product. It visualizes humankind as having the right, even the responsibility, to enlist the natural resources of the earth for its own benefit. In this paradigm, nature has been re-identified in scientific terms, at least since the 1960s, as the human environment. In political economic terms, the environment consists in the physical surroundings and the external social influences working on the individual. Metaphorically, it is our planetary house managed by the tools of science, technology, and economics. Reduced to environment, nature has been demystified, disenchanted, and deconstructed for the convenience of scientific inquiry. As such, its scattered and unrelated parts have been reduced to a scientific vocabulary, being identified as ecology, biodiversity, biosphere, habitat, wildlife, raw materials and natural resources, pollution sinks, climate and atmosphere. Most seriously, the cost of repairing the damage inflicted on any of these parts is weighed in a scale of costs and benefits against jobs and economic growth. The second view, nature, the whole. The world that seeks harmony with nature perceives nature in grander terms. Nature is a wide and open concept. Some associate it with the elements of the natural world, trees, rivers, animals, and the like. Others see it as the processes whereby these came into existence. Still others identify nature with the whole, with the subatomic and cosmic layers of the universe and the realm of spirit, as well as the earth and the visible universe. Thus, few would deny that nature is the source and cradle of life, encompassing those unseen and immaterial life forces that have brought us and everything else into existence. For Spinoza, God and nature were synonymous. In summary, nature demands a holistic vision that accompanies both its material and metaphysical properties. As a minimum, nature is difficult to conceive in any simple, objectifiable way while still conveying the breadth of its meaning. Inherently, nature remains mysterious, with many inexplicable, enchanting, and disenchanting, even threatening facets. It has intrinsic value, extrinsic value, and as well as instrumental value. According to this ethos, every entity, molecule, and atom is an indivisible part of an all-inclusive organism. If humankind continues to embrace the first worldview, the one that prevails in the spirit of our times, the way to harmony between humanity and nature is difficult to perceive, even irrelevant. The second one offers a holistic vision of a path toward harmony with nature and a new spirit for our times. My second major point was the imperative to use different sources of knowledge. Given all the interconnections between what is conceivable to the human senses and only conceivable to the mind, regaining and maintaining harmony with nature requires the knowledge, inspiration, and wisdom not only from scientists, but also from philosophers, leading political leaders as thinkers, poets, sages, and sensitive individuals whose interactions with nature, all their imaginations, inspirations, as well as revelations, offer insights into nature's values. Each of the following sources of knowledge have something to offer in the quest for harmony with nature: scientific inquiry, philosophical reflection, artistic inspiration, and spiritual insight. Science. Mainstream modern science focuses on what the senses see as what is measurable and observable. Although scientific knowledge and interpretations of natural science can be blamed for catapulting the world and the individual into a regime of domineering materiality, this is not the whole picture. Physics and higher mathematics point to many more significant ideas concerning the realities of the universe and life that removes the chains binding human intentions to material circumstances and aspirations. With the assistance of enlightened reason, high mathematics, and imagination, modern science can lead humanity to a high sense of purpose that perceives value in living in rhythm with nature. Physicist Brian Greene's view summarizes this standpoint. To open our ideas to the true nature of the universe has always been one of physics' primary purposes. It is hard to imagine a more mind-stretching experience than learning, as we have over the last century, that the reality we experience is but a glimmer of the reality that is. Philosophy. Philosophy has a critical role to play in the decision-making institutions and processes aimed at harmonizing the needs and aspirations of man with the realities of nature. Philosophy should again be, as it was with Plato and Socrates, an effort at marrying knowledge and practical reason with wisdom and love. As described by leading 20th century philosopher Jacques Maritain, the instruments philosophers employ include intelligible perception, abstract intuition, and judgment. It instills the intelligible contents from sense experience. Animated by human intellect, these instruments provide legitimate sources of knowledge of a metaphysical kind. Philosophical thinking questions the primary principles of being, including identity, unity, finality, and purposes. Because philosophers dig below the surface of material appearances in seeking to understand the essence of being, philosophy is essential to a more holistic understanding of nature. And philosophy, by virtue of such refined thinking, sheds precious light on decision-making aimed at preserving the environment in harmony with nature in many essential ways. Arts. Artists, whether poets, storytellers, musicians, painters, and architects, and their works, inspire relations between human society and nature in ways that enchant nature and the universe for humankind. They touch the heart. The artist projects thoughts generated in the imaginative realm that cannot be engaged within the framework of empiricism and scientific rationality, nor satisfied by economic progress. They remain yet essential to inspiring lifestyles in cadence with the imperatives of nature. Artists and poets evoke the beauties and mysteries of nature, or simply describe human beings in their symbiotic relations with their surroundings. They have always been the privileged media between man and nature. It has been through this source of knowledge that people of various cultures have traditionally kept their specific sense of harmony with nature. And it is this source of knowledge, perhaps even to a greater degree than philosophy, that has been pushed aside by the modern form of scientism and materialism, or I should say the modern obsession with scientism and materialism. The arts need to be moved from the realm of soft values to the realm of debates and decisions on which the future of humankind depends. The arts offer clear, holistic visions of nature by freeing its outer appearances from the drab blur of triteness or familiarity. Simple, fundamental things as trees, clouds, cobwebs, and firewood take on deeper meaning in the arts. Works of fine art with widened imaginations offer consolation and escape from mundane obsessions and recovery of clearer visions of infinite reality. In concluding this section, I should like to mention the late Gabriel Garcia Marquez, who constantly evoked the miraculous in his fiction and who gave as much attention to his literary work as he did the policy issues of his time. Also in this context, I should like to mention the second Secretary General of the United Nations, Mr. Dag Hammarskjöld, for whom the arts were the sine qua non informants of his work in seeking world peace. Spiritual or religion. The role religion plays in influencing the social behavior can be critical for believers and non-believers in determining relations between nature and humankind. Like poetic inspiration, knowledge gained from religion derives from intuitive or mystical experience, revelation as the gift of grace, and spiritual insight. This form of knowing is beyond the frameworks of logic and science. For believers and non-believers, receptivity to this way of knowing can inspire gratitude, wonder, empathy, and an ethic of caring for nature. These thoughts and sentiments can be crucial to the development of more holistic laws and policies informed by high values. In summary, if one admits that nature has metaphysical as well as material dimensions and both intrinsic and instrumental value, is it not crucial that a holistic and interdisciplinary approach be adopted in this effort? Should not philosophical thinking, poetic inspiration, and spiritual reflection contribute to the work of the physical and social sciences to this end? The points I've made are not mere abstractions disconnected from the real world. The change of spirit advocated here has very concrete and positive implications for human health and social well-being. I am sure you are aware of the considerable initiatives in agriculture and other sectors now taking place at local, county, and regional levels that are advancing the cause of a vibrant, sustainable society in sync with the rhythms of nature. Combined, they give ground for hope. And it'll be my colleague, Mr. Gerritsen, who will speak more on that issue. In conclusion, I ask you to imagine a world society as immersed in nature as it is in technology, where we use all our senses, where we feel more alive. It is my contention that harmony with nature is not a mere catchphrase. It is an imperative goal for society. To create more amenable conditions for an ecologically sustainable future in harmony with nature demands considerably more thoughtful reflection, intellectual work, and practical initiatives by governments and civil society. Consistent with Vaclav Havel's line of thinking, a prerequisite for any effective environmental policy is a radical change in heart and spirit. Havel wrote, "Only humankind's understanding of its place in the universe will allow the development of new models of behavior, scales of values, and objectives in life, and through these means, finally bind a new spirit and meaning to specific regulations, treaties, and institutions." Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you so much for your remarks, Dr. Badeau. Our third panelist will be Mr. Jim Gerritsen. Mr. Gerritsen has owned and operated Wood Prairie Farm in northern Maine for almost 40 years and grows and distributes throughout the country certified organic seed potatoes. Mr. Gerritsen also co-founded and serves as the president of the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association. This association was the lead plaintiff in a recent challenge against Monsanto regarding the potential for farm contamination by Monsanto's genetically modified seed products. For his work protecting organic farming and seeds from various threats, including GMO products, Mr. Gerritsen was named one of the 25 visionaries who are changing the world. We look forward to your remarks, Mr. Gerritsen.
Thank you. And thank you for inviting me here today. As Linda said, I'm an organic farmer. We have an organic farm in northern Maine. It's called Wood Prairie Farm. I'd like to express my gratitude particularly to our friends from the plurinational state of Bolivia for your involvement and your generous contribution to the betterment of our world, including your role in organizing today's Harmony with Nature session. There's one more reason that I'm grateful, and this is more of a personal nature. I have gratitude to the Bolivians, along with your neighbors from Peru and Chile and Ecuador, for your most generous gift given to the commons and given to the world's people, and that is the gift of the wonderful food that we call potatoes. It is all of you and your ancestors, spanning 7,000 years, who developed and selected and protected this crop, which now the world recognizes and calls Andean potatoes. It's now the world's fourth largest crop, following wheat, rice, and corn. Before me, my father and my grandfather grew potatoes. We grow potatoes, and we make our living from growing potatoes. To me, it's very significant, and my gratitude is that we have been gifted by this in order to make our living. So thank you to those from the Andean region where potatoes originated. Now, here is a picture of my family. On a family farm, all of us have jobs. We work year-round, and it's a labor of love. We enjoy what we're doing. I'm happy to say that I brought my two daughters down with me yesterday. We drove 600 miles from Maine, and my daughters that are 11 and 15 years old up in the gallery, this is their first time in New York City. So our farm is in the state of Maine, one of the northern tier states in the United States. 90% of Maine's land area is covered with forest, and our farm is an isolated farm, which makes it particularly valuable for growing organic seed. Isolation is a great benefit to us. Now, Maine is probably most known for its lobsters. In addition, with that forest, we have a lot of people that log. We have neighbors that log. And in addition, within Maine, we do have farming. Dairy is one of the largest occupations among farmers in Maine. Also, wild blueberries that grow wild on the blueberry barrens and have for thousands of years. But potatoes is the single biggest crop. This is a picture that appeared in the National Geographic magazine, the issue December 1995, and it's a picture of my wife, Megan, and our then three-month-old baby, Caleb, who is now 19 and has been with us every year for potato harvest. We are one of the last areas in the United States where the schools are still closed in the fall so that the children can help the family farmers get their potato crop harvested. This is how we harvest potatoes now, and this is a harvester called a Yuko that we imported from Finland. Thank you. Now, I want to talk about organic farming and what it is. What exactly does organic mean? Organic farming is a sustainable agricultural system which is natural, in that it fundamentally seeks to be in harmony with nature. It aspires to emulate the sophisticated natural systems of Mother Earth. By design, an organic farm is diverse in the range of crops that are grown. This creates a dynamic resilience and facilitates crop rotation, which has the important benefit of interrupting insect and disease cycles and promoting nutrient cycling and soil health. Crop rotation is a practice common to every organic farm. Livestock and crop production are often integrated in complementary fashion on the same farm. On organic farms, there is a balance, and some crops are harvested as food, and other crops, known as cover crops and green manures, are grown to improve the soil. An organic farm is full of life, of soil life, of plant life, of animal and human life. Traditional human knowledge, elevating the skills of husbandry and stewardship, are recognized and honored. Organic systems are biased towards long-term benefit and stability. Man-made synthetic chemicals or genetically engineered inputs have no place on an organic farm. They are neither needed nor desired. In fact, their toxicity and persistence have a destructive impact on the intricate organic farm ecosystem. Organic farming is nature-based and soil-based. Healthy soil is the foundation of organic agriculture. The health, quality, and fertility of soil on an organic farm improves over time. Significantly, healthy soil grows healthy plants. Healthy plants are in turn strong and vigorous and they have natural defenses against insect and disease damage. Healthy plants produce delicious, nutrient-dense food, which is high quality, it's wholesome, and it sustains life. On the other hand, soil which is unbalanced, abused, and made toxic by synthetic inputs and harmful farming techniques grow plants which lack health and vitality and are subject to insect and disease pressures, which in turn need more chemicals to control. Which would you choose to feed to your family? Nutrient-dense organic food from healthy soil and plants, or food harvested from sickly plants and sprayed with toxic chemicals? An increasing number of scientific studies make clear that organic farming is the superior production system when it comes to the metrics of food quality, food sovereignty, and resilience in the face of climate change. One of the most important studies supporting a shift to organic farming was issued by this very United Nations last September. That study is entitled, "Wake Up Before It's Too Late, Make Agriculture Truly Sustainable Now for Security in a Changing Climate." So perhaps we will agree that organic farming, predicated on harmony with nature, is our best choice for going forward. Yet organic farming does have challenges. These challenges are primarily political and economic in nature. They originate with powerful forces unwilling to give up wrested control and a risky focus on short-term gain. To offer one example of the challenges, we are seed growers, carrying on a tradition of improving and selecting and multiplying seed, a practice which has seen farmers in control for millennia. That is, for 10,000 years since humankind began to farm, seed has been in the control and possession of farmers, the people, part of the commons. Recently, however, in recent decades, private corporations have increasingly taken control of world seed resources, aided by political decisions which sanction theft from the commons via a new concept of patenting life forms. Our recent Oscata et al. V. Monsanto federal lawsuit attempted to challenge the validity of Monsanto's transgenic seed patents. It also sought protection for family farmers who, through no fault of their own, might have become contaminated by Monsanto's patented seed and then perversely be accused of patent infringement for possessing Monsanto's patented material. After 3 years of legal battle, we failed to gain standing in order to proceed. However, our position, the basis of our lawsuit, was vindicated, and we won a partial victory when the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit in Washington, D.C., ordered Monsanto to not sue American farmers should they become contaminated with trace amounts of Monsanto's patented material. Now, there are many layers surrounding the right of farmers to farm the way we choose and to have our crops protected from unwanted genetic and chemical trespass. To aid farmers in protecting themselves, this winter, my organization, Oscata, published a peer-reviewed handbook for farmers entitled Protecting Organic Seed Integrity, the Organic Farmer's Handbook to GE Avoidance and Testing. And on the table to the side, to my right, there's a stack of handbooks, and I would be delighted if each of you would take one with you home and read it. It's a universal concept that Farmers need the tools and techniques and understanding of how to protect themselves in these days to where in countries like our United States, genetically engineered crops are becoming very wide scale and planted on many acres. So how do we implement harmony with nature? I believe that a study of the public trust doctrine will be helpful. The public trust doctrine, which goes back to Roman times, holds that government simply does not possess the authority to sell or privatize the commons. It holds, for example, that government does not have the right to sell to a factory via a permit the ability to pollute the water or to pollute the air. Nor does it have a right for a government-sanctioned monopoly, which is what essentially a patent is, to a corporation which takes an asset out of the commons and gives it to a private entity. Lacking authority, these actions are illegitimate. What I would like to do in closing is read an excerpt from a recently published book by Dr. Mary Christina Wood. The book is entitled Nature's Trust, Environmental Law for a New Ecological Age. This is what Dr. Wood writes. The trust infuses existing environmental law and bureaucracy with a protective fiduciary principle that can rise to modern ecological challenges. When taken to the global level, the trust becomes a diplomatic framework from which international obligations emerge to protect the earth endowment for all generations. The sovereign trust obligation offers a catalyzing principle to citizens worldwide in their common struggle to hold government accountable for protecting life systems. Resonating deeply and resolutely within the ancestral memory of humanity, trust principles must now revive to stir a global assertion of citizenship in defense of humanity and all future generations. May we all have the courage and the conviction to dedicate our lives to harmony with nature and to the protection of Mother Earth. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gerritsen. And if I might add, organic farming is particularly relevant to our discussion today because it illustrates a way to live in harmony with nature. We're here talking about harmony with nature, but you're living it, so we thank you for that. Our final panelist today will be Dr. Fander Falcone Benitez, who is a research professor at the Latin American Faculty of Social Sciences, or FLACSO, in Ecuador. Under President Correa, he was the National Secretary of Planning and Minister of Foreign Affairs. He was also in charge of the country's National Plan for Well-Being. He holds a master's degree in economics and master's and PhD degrees in ecological economics. And he's done postdoctoral research at the Institute of Social Studies in The Hague. He has published numerous articles on environmental issues and economics, including the economics of sustainable development. Thank you, and we look forward to your remarks.
Muchas gracias por la invitación. Quiero agradecer al Estado Plurinacional de Bolivia por tan importante iniciativa y también al embajador, a nuestro representante aquí en Nueva York, en Naciones Unidas, al embajador Javier Lasso, embajador del Ecuador. La idea central de esta presentación que quiero realizar y quiero compartir con ustedes en este día tan importante es que hemos iniciado un proceso de crisis civilizatoria profunda cuyas manifestaciones son observables en los distintos órdenes e incluso en el pensamiento. La actual crisis económica mundial en realidad es una crisis civilizatoria con varias aristas en el plano económico, social, alimentario y evidentemente en el orden físico, en el orden ambiental. Y hay un conjunto de interrelaciones entre estos factores y una organización internacional, gobernanza mundial, colapsada, que no logra acuerdos realmente vinculantes para enfrentar los grandes desafíos ambientales y sociales. Creo que hay que partir de recordar que el 1% más rico de la población mundial recibe el 99% del ingreso mundial. Hay que darse cuenta que en pocos años habrá desaparecido el hielo de la Antártica, lo que marcará un punto de no retorno para el cambio climático mundial, tal como lo afirman todos los últimos reportes con bastante probabilidad del Panel Intergubernamental de Cambio Climático de Naciones Unidas. Hay que recordar también que muchos países quieren alcanzar las pautas de consumo de los países ricos, lo que es ambientalmente inviable en un mundo físico finito. Hay que considerar que la sobreproducción de mercancías comporta profundas injusticias para minorías poblacionales específicas, además de crecientes injusticias ambientales, como se puede observar en recientes publicaciones como el Atlas de Justicia Ambiental y para la naturaleza, en especial por la pérdida de biodiversidad. Esta es una metáfora de los que representa bien los problemas ambientales, la probabilidad versus la incertidumbre. La probabilidad que ocurra una catástrofe, un daño ambiental, puede ser muy baja, pero basta que ocurra el evento para que sus expectativas y su valor esperado sea absolutamente alto. Es decir, basta un suceso para que nos lleve indudablemente a un colapso en términos planetarios. Esta es una representación de la evolución del Producto Interno Bruto del planeta. Es una serie larga en el tiempo, desde los años 60. Está medido el PIB en términos reales, es decir, como se dice en economía descontada la inflación. Y básicamente se observa una especie de gráfico en forma de electrocardiograma, con sus alzas, sus bajas. Y en los últimos años se puede apreciar la profunda crisis y recesión global del planeta. Estas son tasas de crecimiento, pero ayuda a entender bien el otro fenómeno que es este. Este, en cambio, son las emisiones de dióxido de carbono medidos en términos absolutos. No son tasas, son emisiones anuales. Y como sabemos, este es el indicador principal que tenemos para visualizar problemas del cambio climático. Pero no solo eso, sino que el año pasado el laboratorio más antiguo de medición de mediciones de dióxido de carbono observó que por primera vez sobrepasamos las 400 partes por millón en términos de concentración de dióxido de carbono y que como mundo estamos avanzando a 2 partes por millón al año. Esto quiere decir que si seguimos con estas pautas de crecimiento insostenible, independientemente del ciclo macroeconómico, vamos evidentemente hacia un problema de civilización o a un colapso planetario, como lo dicen ahora muchísimos antropólogos, filósofos, economistas, etc. Las láminas anteriores también nos permiten observar otra realidad. A veces la métrica centrada en los factores netamente económicos obscurece un factor real de crisis planetaria cuando no enfrentamos con otro tipo de indicadores, sean sociales, ambientales o también aspectos físicos que tienen que ver con el comportamiento de los seres humanos en el planeta. Para lograr o enfrentar al menos sugerir respuestas a esta crisis civilizatoria, el espacio en el que todos desembocamos, casi como en un sorpresivo océano, es el de la política. En el presente, o como se diría, el de la geopolítica internacional. Es evidente que hay un debate alrededor de pobreza o riqueza, si son los causantes o los determinantes de los problemas ambientales. No se puede soslayar o ocultar que hay un factor de pobreza que genera degradación ambiental, pero también es la riqueza fundamentalmente la que origina grandes disturbios ambientales. Hay sociedades que tienen altos consumos de energía y materiales, y por lo tanto su huella ecológica o su carga ambiental es sumamente alta en el planeta. Por lo tanto hay responsabilidades, todos tenemos responsabilidades, pero estas son absolutamente diferenciadas. Las acciones para evitar este colapso pueden venir desde soluciones cooperativas, desde la construcción de sociedades respetuosas con el 99% de la población y con el medio ambiente. En este contexto se pueden comprender propuestas movilizadoras, ilusiones movilizadoras, como el buen vivir en las distintas acepciones que están presentes en la Constitución boliviana y en la Constitución ecuatoriana. Y en el caso de la Constitución ecuatoriana, el buen vivir está arraigado en la Constitución aprobada en una consulta popular en el año 2008. Creo que ahora más que nunca es necesario volver a recuperar una reflexión política que cree en un futuro distinto para la civilización humana. Indudablemente requerimos construir sociedades sustentables y respetuosas con el ambiente, no solo como una cuestión de principios, sino como una lógica que emana del derecho que la misma humanidad tiene para vivir en los próximos siglos. Y aquí se empata con otro concepto que es necesario darle profundidad, los derechos de la naturaleza, que están reconocidos también en la Constitución del Ecuador y que ventajosamente comienzan a ser parte de una discusión internacional alrededor de los temas de justicia ambiental. Esto implica reconocer acciones prácticas, por ejemplo, el reconocimiento global de las emisiones netas evitadas por conservar el carbono bajo tierra en los combustibles fósiles en determinadas zonas del mundo con alto valor biológico. Es necesario dar respuestas urgentes a esta crisis civilizatoria en el ámbito social y material. Enfrentarla requiere generar nuevas corrientes de pensamiento y acciones políticas decisivas y colectivas en todos los países y culturas del mundo. Y creo que la profundización es absolutamente importante, no solo por el respeto hacia el otro, el respeto hacia nuestras propias sociedades y a las distintas formas de vida que hay en el planeta, sino también por las implicaciones que tienen los aspectos de los conflictos sociales y ambientales en términos del día a día de nuestras sociedades. Acaba de ser publicado recientemente un atlas de justicia ambiental donde se ve claramente los conflictos que originan las faltas de integraciones adecuadas entre naturaleza y sociedad, y eso nos debe llamar también la atención en términos de nuestro quehacer y de nuestra acción colectiva. Creo que el punto y el mensaje clave de esta corta exposición es que si no cambiamos estas conductas como seres humanos, aquellas palabras del gran escritor Gabriel García Márquez podrían ser más juiciosas que nunca. La sabiduría nos llega cuando ya no nos sirve para nada. Muchas gracias.
Thank you for your remarks. They provide an important foundation for understanding that the necessary evolution to earth-centered governance that we're discussing today and harmony with nature must also include an evolution in economic systems to respect nature, local communities, and the well-being of both present and future generations. I'd like to now thank all of the panelists for your insightful remarks. They will begin to help us conceptualize and implement earth-centered governance, which will begin to allow us to create integrated communities of people and nature thriving together. I'd like to now open the floor for comments and questions. In this regard, interveners from the floor are encouraged to limit their remarks to 2 to 3 minutes so that all requests for the floor can be accommodated. Space will be reserved at the end for 2 selected civil society discussants, but we would like to endeavor to end the panel at 12:30 so that we can hear concluding remarks from the offices of the Secretary General and the President of the General Assembly. I would like to give the floor first to the representative of the plurinational state of Bolivia on behalf of the Group of 77 and China. Thank you.
Muchas gracias. I have the honor of delivering this statement on behalf of the Group of 77 and China. The group would like to congratulate the President of the General Assembly for convening this interactive dialogue of the General Assembly of Harmony with Nature in the framework of the Resolution 67/214, dated December 21, 2012. In this regard, the Group of 77 and China congratulates the panel members for their extraordinary contributions in this matter to approach the international community into new models of sustainable life, reaching the balance on the economical, social, and environmental spheres for generations to come. We recall the concern over the documented environmental degradation and all the negative impacts on nature resulting from human activity. At this stage, the Group of 77 and China reaffirms the resolution adopted by the General Assembly on December 21, 2009, in which is reflected our strong belief that humanity should live in harmony with nature. The Group of 77 and China would like to remind all member states that the consumption and production patterns have severely affected the Earth's carrying capacity and that human behavior has been the result of a fundamental failure to recognize that human beings are an inseparable part of nature. Therefore, we cannot damage it without severely damaging ourselves. In this context, we would like to highlight once again that environmental degradation, biodiversity loss, poverty, hunger, malnutrition, diseases, and economic instability persist despite the analytical capability and technological capacity deployed by current civilizations towards eradicating them. For these concerns, we make the Secretary General's words ours by recalling the intention to explore and look for new trends of educational systems on sustainable development to reach a strengthened sustainable development education mainstreamed worldwide. We would like to emphasize today the Mother Day, Earth Day, on the urgency of the international community's duty to rebalance our relationship with nature, taking into account the different processes that are going on to decide targeting goals in the SDGs and the post-2015 development agenda. This is the time to act in order to reach a tangible concept of sustainable development, which should guide human beings to acquire a behavior that is at harmony with nature. The group acknowledged that the international community has made substantial progress on sustainable development in the outcome document of RioPlus20, The Future We Want, which also stands as an important contribution for all our cultures and civilizations pursuing a sustainable development system, recognizing coherence on the integration of the economic, social, and environmental dimensions. Finally, the Group of 77 and China ensures that the outcome of these and previous interactive dialogues of harmony with nature will serve as a strong input on concrete recommendations for the upcoming debates that the United Nations will soon face. I thank you very much.
I thank the distinguished representative of the plurinational state of Bolivia, and I turn the floor to the distinguished representative from Algeria.
Merci, madame. Tout d'abord, je voudrais remercier le président de l'Assemblée générale pour avoir bien voulu organiser cet important dialogue interactif sur l'harmonie avec la nature, coïncidant justement avec la célébration de la Journée internationale de la Terre. Nous voudrions nous associer à la déclaration du distingué représentant de la Bolivie faite au nom du groupe des 77 et de la Chine. Ma délégation voudrait également exprimer ses appréciations à l'endroit de tous les participants et panélistes qui ont bien voulu nous donner un éclairage sur cette question de l'harmonie avec la nature. Ma délégation, d'autre part, voudrait rappeler le rapport important du secrétaire général sur cette question de l'harmonie avec la nature, le référencé à /68/325, et également la résolution de l'Assemblée générale 68/216. Ces deux textes constituent des contributions utiles pour le débat d'aujourd'hui. Madame la Présidente, il convient de rappeler que l'élaboration de l'agenda du développement après 2015 constitue l'occasion de stimuler la volonté politique et de donner une portée concrète aux engagements internationaux pour que cet agenda de développement après 2015 soit réellement un programme de développement couvrant toutes les préoccupations de la communauté internationale et visant en particulier à éradiquer la pauvreté et à promouvoir le développement durable. Le défi auquel on est confronté aujourd'hui, c'est comment le concept de l'harmonie avec la nature pourrait être mis en œuvre tout en tenant compte des intérêts des différents acteurs. Et à cet égard, le débat d'aujourd'hui nous donne quelques éléments de réponse. Les objectifs de développement durable, à cet égard, constituent, dans le cadre de ce processus, des objectifs à atteindre en attendant que les préoccupations vis-à-vis de la nature soient réellement prises en charge. Voilà, Madame la Présidente, quelques observations de la délégation algérienne. Je vous remercie.
Many thanks to the distinguished representative from Algeria. And I would like to now turn to the floor to the distinguished representative from Rwanda. Dr. Benno Werlin has been delegated to speak on behalf of the delegation of Rwanda. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for giving me the floor. I'm just here to let you know that we have been approached by the International Geographical Union on a great initiative that we deem very relevant for today's interactive dialogue on harmony with nature. And the project itself aims at having the year 2016 declared as the UN International Year of Global Understanding. And I have the privilege to be here today with the personality behind that noble initiative, and it is Dr. Benno Werlin, Executive Director, Professor of Social Geography in the Department of Geography of the University of Friedrich Schiller University, Jena. And he's going to enlighten you further on this important initiative. And they are hoping that it's going to be presented to the UN General Assembly, and they request support from member states. Thank you very much. I'm going to let him talk to you on this initiative.
Excellencies, mesdames et messieurs, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to talk to you about the initiative of the International Geographical Union for an international UN year on global understanding. I would like to use the opportunity to invite you to support this vital initiative with its extensive challenges. The IGU seeks support for a UN international year and the proclamation by the General Assembly of this year 2016 for global understanding. What is the International Year of Global Understanding? In a nutshell, this initiative recognizes that global, social, and climate change requires a global level of understanding. It aims to bridge the gap in awareness between local actions and global effects. We'll provide information on culturally differentiated ways to reach global sustainability. The International Year of Global Understanding develops a blueprint for a new geographical view of a radically changing world. We are all experiencing every day that globalization has broadened this bringing far-flung places and people into ever closer contact. New kinds of supranational communities are emerging in an accelerating pace. At the same time, these trends do not efface the local. Globalization is also associated with a remarked reaffirmation of places and regions as distinctive forms of human action. All human actions remain in one or the other way, regionally and locally contextualized. The acceleration of globalization is bringing about a new world order. This involves both the integration of the natural human ecosystems all over the world into a unified planetary environment and the steady emergence of an integrated global socio-economical reality. Global environmental change research has produced, again documented in the latest IPCC report released on April 13, unambiguous scientific insights into Earth system processes. But so far, these insights are too rarely translated into effective policies. It becomes obvious that we need to deepen our knowledge of socio-cultural context to improve social and cultural acceptance of scientific knowledge and to reach culturally differentiated paths to global sustainability. Given these conditions, the IYGU acknowledges that societies and cultures determine the ways we live with and shape our natural living context. The International Year of Global Understanding addresses the ways we live in an increasing globalized world and the transformation of nature from the perspective of global sustainability, the objective the IYGU wishes to achieve for the sake of future generations. To achieve this, genuine transdisciplinarity research is now a first-order necessity. For this, we need to overcome the established divide between the natural and social sciences. Natural and social scientific knowledge have to be integrated with non-scientific and non-Western forms of knowledge to develop a global competence framework. In this context, effective solutions based on bottom-up decisions and actions need to complement the existing top-down measures. The objectives of the International Year of Global Understanding will complement those of the Future Earth initiatives initiated by the Council of Science and the International Social Science Council. The International Year of Global Understanding has five objectives. First, establish a comprehensive global understanding and awareness of the natural and cultural embeddedness of all human actions. Contribute to changing ecologically harmful habits by designing culturally differentiated, exemplary, alternative models of core everyday best practices. Enhance awareness of the individual capacity and responsibility for everyday decision-making. Fourth, produce school teaching models and study guidelines to be implemented at all educational levels from primary to tertiary and post-experience education. And fifth, finally, serve as catalyst for transdisciplinary cooperation and improve the cultural differentiated transfer of scientific insights and so into social practices. With this, IYGU will A, advance science and technology for sustainable development, B, contribute to the achievement of the UN's post-2015 Action Agenda for Sustainable Development, and third, but not least, promote UNESCO's priority for Africa. All in all, IYGU's objectives involve three core elements: research, education, and information. Eight regional action centers, Kigali, Beijing, and Hamilton, are already fixed. Others like Tunis, Mexico City, Rio de Janeiro, Nijmegen, Tokyo, and Los Angeles are in negotiation. All these centers will, in cooperation with an IYGU General Secretariat and supported by more than 90 national action centers all over the world, coordinate all action in these three fields. Hosting institutions are so far ministries, natural academies, universities, or departments of geography. Each regional center, or even each of the more than 90 national centers, will represent during the international year 2016 365 ways to reach global sustainability, 265 culturally specific solutions in as many regional contexts as possible, every day one example of best practice made accessible to everyone, everywhere. To sum up, the IYGU initiative aims to raise awareness of the global embeddedness of everyday life. that is, awareness of the intrinsic links between local action and global phenomena. The IYGU hopes to stimulate people to take responsibility for their actions when they consider the challenges of global social and climate change by taking sustainability into account when making everyday decisions. The IYGU program focuses on three interfaces and is a threefold bridge builder. It focuses on the interface of the local and global by promoting global understanding. It focuses on the interface of the social and the natural, and it focuses on everyday science, on everyday life and science by integrating different types of knowledge. The last two ones start from the premises that we are all part of nature with our body. Nature is not something else than we are part of. To conclude, this initiative has already the full support of UNESCO, the International Council for Science, ICSU, the International Social Science Council, ISSC, the International Council for Philosophy and Humanistic Studies, SIPSH, and expected to become part of the Future Earth Initiative, co-sponsored by ICSU, ISSC, UNESCO, UNEP, UN universities, and the Belmont Forum. Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, the IGU seeks support for UN General Assembly proclamation for the International Year of Global Understanding in 2016. In the name of the IGU, ICSU, ISSC, and SIPSH, I would like to invite you to support this vital initiative with its extensive challenges in this application process and beyond. Excellences, Mesdames et Messieurs, l'UGI cherche des soutiens pour la proclamation de l'année internationale de l'ONU de International Global Year of Understanding. Dans le nom de l'UGI, ICSU, ISSC, SIPSH, nous vous invitons de soutenir cette initiative vitale et ses importants défis. Merci beaucoup. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your remarks. I would like to next call the distinguished representative of Cuba, followed by the representative of Ecuador. There are a number of other speakers who we are looking forward to hearing their interventions, so I would like to move the panelists' remarks and comments on the important interventions that we've heard so far till closer to the end time of 12:30, though I would encourage panelists, if they have a specific comment, to let me know, and I'll be sure to find an appropriate time to allow that comment to be made. Next, please, the distinguished representative of Cuba.
Muchas gracias, señora moderadora. Distinguidos colegas e invitados, la delegación de Cuba se suma a las felicitaciones realizadas al presidente de la Asamblea General por convocar a este diálogo interactivo de la Asamblea General sobre armonía con la naturaleza en el marco de la resolución 68/216 y a las felicitaciones hacia el gobierno del Estado Plurinacional de Bolivia, que a través de su misión permanente en Nueva York ha tenido un rol de liderazgo en la promoción del tema que nos ocupa hoy. Cuba felicita a los panelistas por sus excelentes contribuciones a este diálogo interactivo para examinar los diferentes enfoques económicos en el contexto del desarrollo sostenible que promueva una base ética para la relación entre los seres humanos y la tierra. Señora moderadora, vivir en armonía con la naturaleza debería significar para todos los Estados miembros de las Naciones Unidas un imperativo ético, social, político y económico. Estamos en presencia de un modelo alternativo de desarrollo cuyo objetivo es garantizar el derecho de la humanidad a existir. La base económica y social de este modelo se sustenta en el cambio necesario de los actuales patrones de producción y consumo que se basan en una política de derroche y un uso irracional de los recursos que ofrece la naturaleza. Para ello urge una distribución más equitativa de los recursos y las riquezas y el desarrollo de un profundo sentido de solidaridad mundial con los países más vulnerables y pobres en el mundo. Señora moderadora, Cuba, desde el propio triunfo de la revolución en 1959, ha implementado una estrategia de desarrollo cuyo eje central ha sido buscar la equidad y la inclusión social sobre la base del uso sostenible de los recursos con que cuenta el país, incluidos los recursos naturales. Sin embargo, para países en desarrollo como el mío, las acciones nacionales y la voluntad política de los Estados no son suficientes. También se requieren de una fuerte cooperación internacional y de un gran compromiso político para cumplir con las metas internacionalmente acordadas. El mundo enfrenta las consecuencias de las crisis económica, financiera, medioambiental, energética y alimentaria, que son resultado de prolongados e insostenibles patrones de producción y consumo de los países desarrollados y del agotamiento de un modelo de desarrollo fundado en la explotación indiscriminada de los recursos naturales del planeta. Ello es reflejo claro de que el actual orden económico internacional es insostenible. Señora moderadora, queda apenas un año y cuatro meses para lograr el cumplimiento de los objetivos del desarrollo del milenio. Sin embargo, sabemos que en algunos casos estas metas no serán cumplidas. La causa de ello no es que nos hayamos trazado en el 2000 objetivos inalcanzables o demasiados ambiciosos, sino porque no existe la voluntad política por parte de los países más ricos del mundo para enfrentar su deuda histórica con los más pobres. Estamos en presencia de un momento histórico para la humanidad, donde esta situación pudiera cambiar si verdaderamente existe un compromiso con la vida de todos los ciudadanos del planeta. Nos encontramos inmersos en la elaboración y definición de lo que sería la Agenda de las Naciones Unidas para el Desarrollo con posterioridad al 2015, incluidos los Objetivos de Desarrollo Sostenible, y en ese contexto urge preguntarnos lo siguiente. ¿Dejarán los países desarrollados de tener un consumo superior en 7 u 8 veces al consumo de la mayoría de los países en desarrollo? ¿Recibirán los países en desarrollo la transferencia tecnológica requerida para que sus economías puedan llegar a ser ecológicamente racionales? ¿Serán resueltas las diferencias en cuanto a los derechos de propiedad intelectual, de forma tal que estos dejen de ser una excusa para las tecnologías necesarias no sean transferidas de forma adecuada al sur? ¿Se cancelarán las deudas externas de los países en desarrollo para permitirles avanzar en su desarrollo sostenible? ¿Incrementarán los países desarrollados los compromisos de reducción de emisiones para contribuir con su responsabilidad histórica en la deuda ecológica, esa que les permitió desarrollarse sin límites y que les permite aún continuar con su crecimiento económico? Señora moderadora, ¿no será con propuestas de privatización, recortes a la seguridad social, la disminución de salarios y empleos, ni la redistribución del supuesto ahorro por ese concepto que será erradicada la pobreza ni el hambre? Por el contrario, estas políticas solo generarán un mayor descontento social, inestabilidad y conflictos que luego serán utilizados como pretextos por parte de algunos países desarrollados para intervenir en los países del sur y apropiarse de sus recursos naturales. Ello contribuirá a un mayor desarrollo de la industria armamentista y, por consiguiente, una mayor contaminación del medio ambiente. La actual arquitectura financiera internacional ahoga las economías de los países en desarrollo con políticas que no se corresponden con las verdaderas prioridades de desarrollo en el sur e impone altas tasas de interés por los préstamos que ofrece, además de las consabidas condicionalidades como requisito para recibir dicha ayuda. Señora moderadora, para concluir quisiera señalar que este diálogo que tenemos hoy debe centrar la atención de la comunidad internacional sobre las verdaderas causas de la actual situación de múltiples crisis que vive el mundo, la injusta distribución de la riqueza al nivel nacional e internacional y cuyos resultados deberían formar parte de los insumos que alimentarán luego el proceso intergubernamental de negociaciones de la Agenda para el Desarrollo con posterioridad al año 2015. Muchas gracias.
Thank you. I now turn the floor to the distinguished representative from Ecuador to be followed by the representative of Malaysia.
Muchas gracias, señora moderadora. Aníbal Quijano, un pensador peruano, antropólogo, sociólogo, nos dice que la mayor contribución que nos legó Gabriel García Márquez con su novela Cien Años de Soledad es la comprensión de la noción circular del tiempo, tan propia de la gente de nuestras tierras. Desde esas sensibilidades, esos lenguajes, ha ido construyéndose esta ancestral propuesta de relación con la naturaleza, y que por muy nueva que resulte en otras partes de este mismo planeta, debe ser asumida para bien de nosotros mismos, para bien de la naturaleza. Permítame también, señora moderadora, destacar esta convocatoria, así como la coordinación conjunta con la delegación del Estado Plurinacional de Bolivia y la delegación de mi país, Ecuador, al suscitar este encuentro tan significativo, evocador del Día Internacional de la Madre Tierra, en este cuarto diálogo interactivo sobre armonía con la naturaleza. También quiero sumarme a lo expresado por el Grupo de los 77 y China y agradecer a los panelistas, a la panelista, por sus aportes, que son como la nueva pedagogía que nos permite entender esa relación que el ser humano debe emprender impostergablemente con la naturaleza. Ecuador inició ya un importante camino hacia el reconocimiento de los derechos de la naturaleza, en medio de cierto absorto de aquellos que más que amarla quieren solo dominarla. Es que con esa armonía con la naturaleza buscamos el buen vivir, y vale que el mundo lo discuta, lo asuma, y todos forjemos una suerte de declaración universal de los derechos de la naturaleza. La protección de la madre tierra no tiene fronteras y se requieren respuestas que vayan más allá de los compromisos nacionales. En este mundo que es uno solo, interrelacionado, interdependiente, que se enferma por lo que mal hacemos en cualquier recóndito lugar de sus inagotables meandros, lo hemos planteado ya en varias oportunidades. El arreglo debe ser global. Ecuador reconoce que el camino para concretar el ejercicio de los derechos de la naturaleza no está aún definido. Por lo mismo, reitera su invitación a desarrollar un conocimiento distinto y proponemos cambiar la matriz epistemológica que ha orientado el desarrollo en este último milenio hacia una visión integral. Proponemos también conformar un grupo de amigos de la Madre Tierra para continuar con la discusión hacia esa Declaración Universal de los Derechos de la Naturaleza. Con el reconocimiento de los derechos a la naturaleza, no necesariamente debemos entender que no se pueden utilizar sus recursos, sino más bien orientar una nueva definición de respeto y de ética renovada para hacer un uso responsable de sus elementos, lo que nos llevaría a alcanzar una vida plena que permita la satisfacción de las necesidades esenciales de todos los seres humanos, excluyendo el abuso y el consumo depredador insostenible. Por todo ello, deberíamos ampliar la continuidad del debate a fin de estar en capacidad de reconocer su vinculación con el actual proceso de construcción de la Agenda para el Desarrollo post 2015. Muchas gracias.
Thank you, and your recommendation for a Friends of Mother Earth network sounds quite consistent with the call for a knowledge network in the concept note for this dialogue. I would like to turn over the floor now to the distinguished representative of Malaysia, who will be followed by the representative of Nicaragua. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for giving me the floor. At the outset, allow me to congratulate the President of the General Assembly for organizing this dialogue. I also would like to thank you, Madam Chair, for moderating this interactive dialogue and panel members for the excellent presentation, which has further enriched today's discussion. I also would like to join other speakers in thanking the plurinational state of Bolivia, whose initiative has brought to this fourth series of interactive dialogue. The theme of today's dialogue emphasizing the importance of adapting a balance a balanced approach to pursue development that is harmonious with our ecosystem is very timely as we embark on our mission to increase global awareness of economic, social, and environmental impacts of sustainable development activities on the planet. Malaysia ranks 21st globally in absolute diversity. Malaysia has protected over 23% of its territory, exceeding a global target of 10%. Mangrove and inland swamp areas are listed as priority protection areas. These are brief facts on our efforts to promote harmony with nature through the preservation of our rich biodiversity. In a lighter vein, we can all, in a small way, contribute to protect the environment by going green. To begin with, we can make a simple sacrifice by pledging for a greener world. Going green is not as hard as many people think. It is amazing how simple and everyday things can make a huge difference in caring for Mother Nature. Being environmentally friendly is not just a good deed, but it is also a good way to save money. Every year, we seem to be confronted by price hikes that many people will be in need of tightening their budget. In my country, for example, the increase in electricity and toll prices alone this year triggered a need for Malaysians to make some small lifestyle changes in adapting to the price hikes. For those worried about the electricity hike, a great way to reduce the electricity and water bills are to install solar panels and rainwater harvesting systems. Although it may be slightly pricey, it is a great investment in the long run, while at the same time, a great way to preserve Mother Nature. Also, going more green will not only help us to save costs, but will also play a small part in reducing landfill waste, cleaning the air, and preserving our environment. We can make small changes in our everyday life, such as taking shorter showers, switching off the lights and fan when leaving the room, or taking the stairs rather than the elevator to make a difference. In a highly consumerist society, we often could not go a day without buying anything. But when we do buy our groceries or products, try to make a green choice by choosing products which last longer and energy efficient and biodegradable. We should also think twice before throwing things away. Before throwing something in the trash, try to think of creative ways of how we can reuse it. A quick search through the internet will show us how we can use things like old bottles, tin cans, cupboard to make amazing new things. The same goes for old furniture, electronics, clothes, and other household items. Items you may initially think of as rubbish can be transformed into a whole new item with a do-it-yourself makeover. And if not, we can always donate our unwanted items to the less fortunate. We must not forget that our trash may be someone else's treasure. One may not think that their green pledge means much, but if they implement these practices every day, they will accumulate into saving as quite a substantial amount of energy or products. And with every individual that makes this pledge, they are making an impact in their own way. Every little bit matters, so keep that in mind as we celebrate to commemorate the International Mother of Day. To conclude, I wish Happy International Mother Day to everybody in this room, and I thank you again, Madam Chair, for giving the floor.
Thank you so much. And we will hear next from the distinguished representative from Nicaragua, to be followed by the representative from Brazil.
Muchas gracias, señora moderadora. Nicaragua, en primer lugar, quisiera sumarse a la declaración hecha por nuestro compañero, el distinguido embajador de Bolivia. A la misma vez, agradecemos este diálogo sobre la armonía con la naturaleza, la cual Nicaragua hace suya, así como la resolución 65-164. Asimismo, queremos agradecer a todos los panelistas sus excelentes presentaciones, las cuales aportan las evidencias científicas que confirman lo que nuestros pueblos originarios nos vienen diciendo desde hace tiempo, y es que nuestra madre tierra se encuentra en peligro, y con ello la especie humana, la biodiversidad y la vida misma. Es imprescindible que todas y todos los pueblos tomemos mayor conciencia de la necesidad de cuidar, amar y respetar nuestra madre tierra. Los países desarrollados deben a comenzar a actuar con responsabilidad y cumplir sus compromisos. Río Más 20 representa la oportunidad para que lo demuestren. Señor presidente, el acelerado ritmo de consumo y los devastadores métodos tecnológicos de explotación de los recursos naturales de la tierra hacen un daño irreversible, amenazando con destruir los regalos que nos ha dado nuestra madre tierra. Estos patrones de producción y de consumo, producto del modelo económico actual, son insostenibles. Agradecemos al compañero Fander Falconi, ¿verdad?, toda su explicación y los datos que nos hizo sobre los impactos negativos que está teniendo el cambio climático en nuestra madre tierra, los constantes y más intensos huracanes, cómo los glaciares se están derritiendo y cómo nuestros pueblos cada vez son más vulnerables al cambio climático. Y de ahí la importancia de combatir todas y todos juntos y poner nuestros esfuerzos para revertir esta situación. Señora coordinadora, debemos de asumir la responsabilidad de ser los guardianes de este planeta, cooperar para asegurar que los recursos comunes de la humanidad, incluyendo la atmósfera, sean utilizados de manera sostenible y compartida equitativamente entre todas las naciones y corregir la sobreexplotación de estos recursos. Para lograr estos fines, es necesario ubicar el amor y la solidaridad en el centro de toda actividad humana, sin excepciones ni exclusiones, y vivir como hermanas y hermanos en paz y armonías con nosotros mismos y con la naturaleza. Las Naciones Unidas tienen que convertirse en el centro que armonice los esfuerzos de las naciones por alcanzar estos propósitos comunes. La elaboración de los Objetivos de Desarrollo Sostenible son una buena oportunidad para que en estos se proteja y se defienda y se salve nuestra madre tierra. Todos los países, sin excepción, debemos de promover este derecho de la madre tierra y su respeto y de la humanidad y emprender acciones individuales y colectivas para prevenir interferencias peligrosas con los ciclos naturales de la madre tierra. Comprometernos con el derecho al desarrollo sostenible de todas las naciones, tomando debidamente en cuenta los principios básicos de justicia climática y de responsabilidad común, pero diferenciada, y la equidad. En Nicaragua, nuestro modelo de desarrollo se implementa en armonía con la naturaleza, con la madre tierra y en total apego a esta importante resolución. Como parte de ese compromiso, en los últimos 5 años hemos transformado totalmente nuestra matriz energética. Hoy orgullosamente podemos decir que ya nuestra matriz energética es más de un 50% de energía renovable. Y para el año 2020 nuestros planes son de ser un 90% de energía renovable. Nuestro compromiso con nuestro pueblo incluye un compromiso con la promoción del desarrollo humano entendido como desarrollo sostenible y equivalente a vivir en armonía con la naturaleza, centrado en el ser humano y ejercido en un ambiente de gobernabilidad y con directa participación ciudadana, con equidad social, con valores basados en las creencias ancestrales. Hemos iniciado un proceso nacional para dar a conocer la Declaración Universal por el Bien Común de la Tierra y de la Humanidad en todas las escuelas y hogares de Nicaragua. Señora coordinadora, todos nuestros pueblos tienen derecho al buen vivir dentro del marco de un desarrollo sostenible y en armonía con el bien común de la Madre Tierra y de la humanidad. Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much for your remarks. I would like to give the floor now to the distinguished representative of Brazil, to be followed by the representative of Kenya.
Gracias, señora presidente. Y quisiera inicialmente saludar al representante permanente del Estado Plurinacional de Bolivia, embajador Sasha Laurenti, y felicitarle, así como al canciller David Choquehuanca, por el liderazgo de su país en la promoción del tema de la armonía con la naturaleza en el contexto de la Agenda de Desarrollo después de 2015. Agradezco además al presidente de la Asamblea General por hacer posible esta celebración al Día de la Madre Tierra. Esta es una oportunidad para intercambiarnos puntos de vista y reflejar sobre la relación fundamental entre la humanidad y la naturaleza. Como evidencian los diálogos de los años anteriores, las voces de la sociedad civil, de los pueblos indígenas y de la academia son cruciales para una reflexión sobre el paradigma hegemónico con sus valores y prácticas insostenibles. Señora Presidente, el principio 1 de la Declaración de Río de Janeiro sobre Ambiente y Desarrollo afirma que, y yo cito, los seres humanos constituyen el centro de las preocupaciones relacionadas con el desarrollo sostenible. Tienen derecho a una vida saludable y productiva en armonía con la naturaleza. Fin de la citación. En el documento final de la conferencia Río + 20, los Estados miembros, una vez más, reconocieron que la promoción de la armonía con la naturaleza es necesaria para el balance entre las necesidades económicas, ambientales y sociales de las generaciones presente y futura. En la visión de Brasil, el concepto de desarrollo sostenible exige cambios concretos en nuestros caminos de desarrollo, con equidad social y en armonía con la naturaleza. El foco renovado y fortalecido sobre el desarrollo sostenible ha sido clave para los resultados positivos de muchas políticas sociales y económicas en mi país. Señora Presidente, es necesario pensar en políticas públicas y modelos de desarrollo basados en un paradigma más equilibrado respecto a las tres dimensiones del desarrollo sostenible y más favorable a la adopción de padrones de vida y de crecimiento económico en armonía con la naturaleza. En ese sentido, el reto central de la Agenda de Desarrollo después de 2015 es la creación de un ambiente internacional que sea favorable a la erradicación de la pobreza y al desarrollo sostenible en armonía con la naturaleza. Creemos que sea importante renovar y fortalecer la centralidad del concepto de desarrollo sostenible en el plan internacional, teniendo en cuenta las responsabilidades comunes, pero diferenciadas entre países desarrollados y en desarrollo. En el ámbito internacional, el paradigma de desarrollo sostenible en armonía con la naturaleza requiere, por ejemplo, el liderazgo de los países desarrollados en la adopción de patrones de consumación sostenibles y en la facilitación de tecnologías ambientalmente correctas para los países en desarrollo. La principal amenaza a la armonía es lo que nuestro colega cubano llamó hoy en nuestro debate el uso irracional de los recursos de la naturaleza. La cooperación internacional es llave para el avance rumbo a la Agenda de Desarrollo Sostenible verdaderamente equilibrada. Una agenda que lleve en cuenta las tres dimensiones del concepto de desarrollo sostenible, que reconozca las diferentes responsabilidades entre los países y que promueva un ambiente internacional favorable al desarrollo sostenible. Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much. We have six speakers remaining, including two civil societies, so we'd like to close the list at this time and continue with the remaining speakers so that we allow some time for the panelists to respond to the many important points that have been raised so far. So I'd next like to call to the floor the distinguished representative from Kenya, to be followed by the representative from Egypt.
Madam Moderator, Excellencies, distinguished participants, please allow me to first thank the President of General Assembly and the delegations of Bolivia and Ecuador for organizing this interactive and very timely exchange. I would also like to recognize and appreciate the distinguished panelists for wonderful presentations that have set the tune for this discussion. Madam Moderator, Kenya would like to align itself with the presentation made by the permanent representative of Bolivia on behalf of the group of 77 and China. I would like to thank you for giving me this opportunity to share with you Kenya's experiences in successfully coexisting with, in harmony with nature and Mother Earth. I will share with you three experiences and three ways forward, even though we have a lot of examples. First, let me just say that this discussion is very timely because it resonates very well with the ongoing discussion on the post-2015 development agenda. It also gives us an opportunity to raise awareness around the world on the challenges we face regarding the well-being of the planet and all the life it supports. The first example I want to share with you. Madam Moderator, individuals in their private capacity can make a huge difference. The Green Belt Movement in Kenya, which was founded by the late Nobel Peace Laureate, Professor Wangari Maathai, initiated a national and now international tree planting and civic awareness campaign that has seen the planting of millions, in fact, an estimated 50 million trees in Kenya, and it has assisted nearly a million women, 900,000, to establish tree nurseries and plant trees to reverse the effects of deforestation and also to support themselves economically. The Kenyan Constitution, the second example that I want to give is the importance of having structural and legal framework. The Kenyan Constitution contains a whole chapter on environment requiring sustainable exploitation, utilization and management and conservation of the environment and natural resources to ensure the equitable sharing of the accruing benefits. It sets a minimum tree cover of at least 10% of the land area, protecting and enhancing intellectual property of indigenous knowledge of biodiversity and the genetic resources of the communities, encouraging public participation in the management, protection, and conservation of the environment, and protecting genetic resources and biological diversity. The third example, Madam Moderator, is that the government of Kenya has also made fiscal interventions such as abolition of customs duty on imported timber used for various purposes meant to encourage importation of timber, consequently allowing replenishment of local resources. One of the most important lessons learned from this process is that we can all take simple actions that can make a huge difference, as has been mentioned earlier by other delegations. If each one of us plant, for example, 10 trees, the cumulative effect can build a critical mass within a few years, like we have seen with the example of the Green Belt Movement in Kenya. Involvement in local initiatives and volunteering time to serve one's community, as demonstrated earlier, has greatly inspired many in Kenya especially. Madam Moderator, I would like to just mention, it is 10 years since Wangari Maathai, the late Professor Wangari Maathai, won her Nobel Peace Prize. And in commemoration of this, Kenya plans to, in her memory, to organize a tree planting, at least one tree, hopefully, on the 19th of May this year at this United Nations grounds. In fact, it will also be an occasion to unveil a tree that she planted on the 17th of May in 2000 before she passed on. As a way forward, and I'll mention just briefly two or three, we all need to collectively change the unsustainable economic policies that are wresting control of the natural world to build private wealth for the few at the expense of many. A well-functioning economy should reduce the level of inequality by balancing private and public interests for a greater well-being of human beings and Mother Earth. We have to reorient our education curriculum to ensure early learning by students and youth of the importance of protecting Mother Earth and how to do it. Finally, we place great Kenya places great importance on accurate, reliable, and timely statistical data for policy formulation, environmental monitoring, assessment, and early warning systems. These initiatives have helped Kenya, as others relating to solar, wind, hydro, and geothermal electricity generation, and can be emulated by others to ensure that we protect Mother Earth. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and thank you for your mention of Wangari Maathai, who is an inspiration to all of us. I would now welcome to the floor the distinguished representative from Egypt, to be followed by the representative from China.
Thank you, Madam Moderator, for giving me the floor. I would like to start by thanking the President of General Assembly, as well as the Permanent Representative of Bolivia for organizing this interactive debate on the occasion of Earth Day, and which is taking place amid the efforts to develop sustainable development goals and shape the new development agenda post-2015. I would like also to thank the Permanent Mission of Bolivia for its initiative and efforts to establish the subject of our discussion today as an agenda item on the General Assembly agenda. At the outset, I would like to associate my comments with a statement of G77 and China. It is in the wake of 2008 international crisis related to finance, energy, and food that the need was felt to change the way we run our economies and business. Moreover, in view of the lack of addressing efficiently the challenges related to climate change, doing business as usual became no longer an option. It is in this context that calls were made for shifting into new paradigms to improve human well-being and social equity while significantly reducing environmental risks and ecological scarcities. These developments underscored the primordial importance of sustainable development as it calls for the convergence between the economic, social, and environmental dimensions of development. The problem is that implementation has proven to be difficult. In this regard, governance reform and accountability, which was raised in today's discussion by Frank Berman, are important to address the implementation gap. Harmony with nature is based on applying a holistic thinking to all human activities in relation to nature, which is converging with the integration and cohesion of sustainable development three dimensions, economic, social, and environmental. Living in harmony with nature implies an equitable and balanced relationship with the planet. At the core of that relationship lies both a profound respect for the Earth and an acknowledgement of the vital imperative that the planet continues to exist and thrive, as well as acceptance of humanity's responsibility to restore the health and integrity of the Earth system. Until now, common thinking about the economy works only in conventional terms. For example, increasing wealth, managing supply and demand, market dynamics, and financial incentives, which have sidestepped a basic scientific understanding of how the Earth system on which the world economy depends operate. It is important to highlight the extent to which this economic paradigm negatively affects sustainable development and efforts to attain harmony with nature. An exclusive emphasis on profit-making can significantly compromise sustainable development through unsustainable consumption and production patterns. Myself, being an Egyptian, I feel privileged to address the theme of harmony with nature, as it was one of the foundations, in addition to scientific thinking and hard work, based on which the ancient Egyptians created their civilization. Interestingly, Egyptians maintained some of their old sustainable practices, particularly in rural areas in the fields of agriculture and construction, which respect their surrounding nature. As an African, although Also, I would like to highlight the richness of the African continent in natural resources and in sustainable practices. Therefore, harmony with nature can bring a lot of answers to the continent's needs with regard to sustainable development. It is always said that in the aftermath of crisis, fresh and new ideas grow. It is important to be open when considering different options to achieve sustainable development. These options should not be mutually exclusive. On the contrary, they have to be mutually supportive. Thank you, Madam Moderator.
Thank you. And I would like to inform the order of the floor is going to be the distinguished representative from China, then India, then Benin, then the two civil society discussants. It is just after 12:30, so I would ask that interveners please limit your remarks to 3 minutes, if possible, so the panelists have a chance to respond, and then we can move to our concluding remarks. And speaking as a member of civil society myself, I'm sure that we would all very much welcome posting on the webpage for this dialogue on harmony with nature the full remarks that have been provided here today. They're all very important. So, again, to turn to the floor to the distinguished representative from China, and if we could limit remarks to 3 minutes, that would be much appreciated. Thank you.
Chairman女士, 中国支持玻利维亚代表77国集团和中国所作发言。 中方赞赏玻利维亚倡议设立国际地球母亲日，及在促进人与自然和谐相处方面所做的贡献。中方认为，生态文明建设关系人类生存发展及子孙后代长远大计。我们支持将加强生态文明建设，促进可持续发展，作为2015年后发展议程的重点领域和优先方向。 应树立尊重自然、顺应自然、保护自然的生态文明理念，增强节约意识、环保意识和生态意识，形成合理消费的理念和生活方式。坚持节约资源、保护环境，坚持共同但有区别的责任原则、公平原则和各自能力原则，积极应对全球气候变化，保护生物多样性。 维护全球生态安全，提高森林覆盖率，合理利用森林资源，控制空气污染，安全处置危险废物，保障城乡居民饮水安全，合理配置，高效利用水资源，推进水循环利用，同时加强防洪抗旱减灾体系建设，加强海洋环境保护，合理利用海洋资源。 走向生态文明新时代，建设美丽中国是实现中华民族伟大复兴中国梦的重要内容。中国共产党第18次全国代表大会已将生态文明建设同经济、政治、文化、社会建设一道，纳入中国特色社会主义事业五位一体总体布局。党的18届三中全会进一步提出。 要围绕建设美丽中国、深化生态文明体制改革，加快建立生态文明制度，健全国土空间开发、资源节约利用、生态环境保护的体制机制，推动形成人与自然和谐发展、现代化建设新格局。中国将继续坚持节约资源和保护环境的基本国策，更加自觉地推动。 绿色发展、循环发展、低碳发展，绝不以牺牲环境为代价去换取一时的经济增长。我们愿在生态文明领域同其他国家积极开展交流合作，推动成果共享，携手共建生态良好的地球美好家园。谢谢主席女士。
Thank you very much, and I'd like to turn the floor to the distinguished representative from India, followed by the representative from Benin.
Thank you, Madam Moderator, for giving me the floor. Let me begin by congratulating the plurinational state of Bolivia for having championed the idea of harmony with nature at the United Nations and for their leadership in organizing this interactive debate. We must also thank the President of the General Assembly for his stewardship in making this event possible. We, of course, thank the panelists for their presentations. Madam Moderator, this annual dialogue is an opportunity for reminding ourselves of the need to live in harmony with nature and for placing this unique concept at the center of the global discourse on sustainable development. Coming from India, we are, of course, deeply conscious of the need to live in harmony with nature. This is an established part of the Indian ethos and culture, a culture of frugality, of doing more with less, of taking only as much as required from nature, and of no wastage. Is a part and parcel of the wisdom we have received through generations over millennia. Living in harmony with nature must also mean upholding of the principle of equity. It must ensure an equitable sharing of the nature's resources. Nature does not discriminate between the rich and the poor, even though some of us tend to take more from nature than what is equitable or indeed fair. The current consumption patterns and the so-called modern lifestyles made popular in the developed countries are not only unsustainable, but also inequitable. And we must find new pathways to transition to a culture of frugal living, less wastage, and equitable sharing of resources. We cannot treat nature as a commodity. We must also recognize the crucial role of technology for finding solutions to the sustainability problem the world faces. There's a need to fully utilize the potential of science, technology, innovation, and to craft a facilitative process to foster cooperation and collaboration for finding collective solutions. It is also important, Madam Moderator, to remind ourselves of the compact we forged at the Rio Conference in 1992, and many speakers have alluded to this, and the need for fully respecting the Rio principles for sustainable development. This is all the more important in the context of the SDGs and the post-2015 development agenda. Madam Moderator, it is our conviction that poverty eradication must remain the overarching focus of international cooperation. Needs of the poor, in our opinion, are at the heart of achieving sustainable development. The environment cannot be improved in conditions of poverty. In conclusion, Madam Chair, allow me to quote the words of the Indian Prime Minister Indira Gandhi when she spoke at the Stockholm Conference on the Human Environment in 1972. Begin quote, "Modern man must reestablish an unbroken link with nature and with life. He must again learn to invoke the energy of growing things and to recognize, as did the ancients in India centuries ago, that one can take from the earth and the atmosphere only so much as one puts back into them." End quote. I thank you.
Thank you. And I give the floor to the distinguished representative of Benin, followed by civil society discussant Dr. Judy Kuryansky.
Je vous remercie, Madame la Modératrice. Je n'ai pas un discours préparé pour cette manifestation, mais je voudrais porter témoignage de l'importance du sujet dans le processus de l'élaboration du programme de développement pour l'après 2015. Le sommet de Rio nous a donné la juste mesure des défis que nous avons à relever dans les relations entre l'homme et la nature pour assurer la pérennité de la planète. Au-delà des défis que nous posent les changements climatiques, les distorsions dangereuses sur le plan social et économique menacent l'avenir de la biosphère. Nous devons repenser nos modèles de vie et nos projets d'avenir pour rétablir l'équilibre avec les limites de la planète. Je viens d'un pays où nous respectons et célébrons la nature comme base de vie. Nous disposons d'un ensemble de règles qui régissent les rapports entre l'homme et la nature. Les forêts sacrées, les rivières sacrées, les interdits divers, relatif à l'emploi des ressources ont permis de préserver ces patrimoines comme ces patrimoines qui sont communs aux générations présentes et futures. Inspirés par ces traditions, nous avons aujourd'hui des modèles de production qui contribuent à la préservation de l'environnement et à l'essor économique. Actuellement, nous développons un modèle d'agriculture circulaire qui permet d'offrir des emplois, mais aussi d'assurer la satisfaction des besoins de façon durable. Nous sommes en train d'œuvrer pour partager avec les autres pays qui luttent contre la pauvreté ces modèles pour pouvoir, disons, aider la communauté internationale à résoudre ce problème global et crucial quand il s'agit de préserver la nature. Je vous remercie, Madame la Présidente.
Thank you very much. And now I'd like to turn the floor to our two civil society discussants. First, Dr. Judy Kuryansky, and followed by Dr. Ashwani Vazish.
Thank you very much, and great appreciation to all the stakeholders and participants in this very important dialogue that comes at the perfect time that the Open Working Group is discussing the post-2015 agenda, and also on the heels of the discussions that were convened by the President of the General Assembly about multi-stakeholder partnerships, because it's important for us to work together about this. I'd like to offer some reflections about what happened, what was discussed this morning, and some quick recommendations from three hats that I wear. One hat is from academia. As a professor at Columbia University Teachers College, which is a very diverse community of students, I'd like to recommend that in the focus group of education, that this concept of diversity of culture be integrated throughout the education systems in all the countries in the post-2015 agenda. The President of the General Assembly this morning asked for research. In the field of eco-psychology, there is much research that supports the importance of nature and the appreciation of nature for the immune system, for health, for sustainable individuals as well as societies. For example, children with ADHD, which we know so much about, had higher cognitive development when they simply walk in a park. And patients in hospitals, research has shown that they heal better when they are simply able to see a window from their hospital bed that shows some green. Research shows this. There's also models that we have around the country, and the Open Working Group and has been looking for models, and we've heard some of them this morning, that show the importance of working with nature as a way for sustainable individuals and societies. The Pachamama Foundation has been respecting the biodiversity knowledge and the dreaming practices of the Achua people in Ecuador. I'm sure the delegates from Ecuador are very familiar with that. The Women's Alliance in India and in Africa is teaching women farming, but not just farming and being able to own the land and get their rights to the land, but also feel that they deserve this. So psychological principles and people's feeling of pride is so important in this discussion. There is becoming now sustainable retreats and workshops in Belize, so that besides people appreciating the parrotfish in this that beautifully biodiverse country, that they also are learning about their personal growth. There was discussion this morning about the importance of arts. El Salvador has Art in Action, where kids are not going into gangs when they are engaging in music. My own programs around the world in Haiti and Japan and in China after disaster show that kids, when they're participating in music, become resilient. These are the issues being discussed at the Open Working Group, and these, I think, are targets that we need to pay attention to. So in my second, quickly, hat as an NGO representative of ECOSOC-accredited NGOs here at the United Nations, the circle of friends that was called for here for Mother Earth resonates a great deal with the circle of friends that we are establishing about mental health and well-being, that Ambassador Otto from Palau and Ambassador from Benin and the Ambassador from Trinidad and Tobago have taken up as a cause. And I think the more that people participate in this from a multi-stakeholder point of view, the member states and civil society and other stakeholders, we will be able to accomplish something that will aim towards the well-being of the people of this planet. Well-being has already been discussed here at the UN, and it needs to be highlighted. This started by the government of Bhutan in 2012 with the resolution and then the high-level meeting. We have been advocating at the Psychology Coalition about the importance of well-being as another paradigm included with GDP for development. We must look at this. The Happy Planet Index has been honoring Costa Rica twice and the government of Denmark to look at psychological well-being and also ecological footprint. Our own state of Maryland has a general progress indicator. All these things are real measures that we can adopt, use, and apply to the post-2000 as a journalist. And
if I could ask, I'm so sorry to wrap up fairly quickly because we have to take time from the other speakers, and I'm sure they would like to respond to your remarks. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, and I'd like to turn to the last speaker, Dr. Ashwani Vazish, and if you could please keep your remarks to 2 minutes if possible, that would be much appreciated. Thank you.
Excellencies, Madam Moderator, members of the distinguished panel, my name is Ashwani Vazish, a professor of sustainability at Ramapo College of New Jersey and the U.S. representative for the People's Sustainability Treaties, which can be found at sustainabilitytreaties.org. I'm a sustainability planner with a focus on urban ecology. My basic argument is that if we want to understand how to operationalize the enduring concept of harmony with nature in hard, pragmatic terms, there are two places we can look. We can look either at pre-industrial civilizations where living in harmony with nature was necessary and even imperative, or we can look at the cutting edge of ecological science, specifically at scale hierarchic ecosystem ecology, which shows us that the only way in which we can live sustainably is indeed in harmony with nature. In this latter view, humans are most appropriately seen as components of ecosystems. We need to, more than anything else, see ourselves as a part of nature, not apart from it. Further, cities are usually seen as the quintessential technological artifacts of human civilization, thought to set us apart from nature. If we are truly to live in harmony with nature, we must first ecologize our cities, harmonizing them with the natural processes and functions. From a theoretical perspective, I present three models. The first, complex systems. In complex systems, reality is always more than a singularity. We need to depict nature in multiple and diverse ways. This is the scientific imperative for a participatory model of societal decision making. The second deals with the nature of nature itself, in that ecosystems are best seen as emergent from often intangible processes and functions that undergird them. So a tree, for example, is most usefully seen as emerging from the flows of water, carbon, nitrogen, calcium, and so on, not as tree, trunk, branches, roots, and so on. And the third deals with the way we think about capital. If we go back to a pre-industrial past, we see that there are three factors of production: land, labor, and capital. Capital or money was most scarce, and so a system was devised to prioritize the conversion of land and labor to capital. This, today, we call capitalism. Today, however, we live in a different world, a world in which nature is the true scarce resource and in which capital is abundant. Now, our task is to use our endowments of man-made capital to enhance and restore both human capital and natural capital. In closing, three specific recommendations. Consistently and pervasively promote the deployment of green infrastructure as a substitute for built infrastructure. Consistently and pervasively promote the deployment of urban heat island mitigation strategies. Consistently and pervasively promote the deployment of measures
that take a process function approach to telling change over time. For instance, we should adopt some measure like the Genuine Progress Index as a substitute for gross domestic product. And we should encourage on all fronts the deployment of measures such as ecological footprint, the water footprint.
If we could wrap up, thank you very much with your recommendations, if you could conclude quickly. Thank you.
I thank you for this opportunity to intervene in the discussion and for considering my thoughts on the enduring notion of harmony with nature.
Thank you so much to all the interveners, and this concludes the intervention portion of the panel. I would like to invite the panelists to provide some concluding remarks based on what they've heard today. And if you could please limit your remarks to a minute, if possible, to up to two, so that we may hear concluding remarks from the offices of the Secretary General and the President of the General Assembly. So we'll go in the order in which you spoke. So Dr. Bierman.
Thank you very much. It's very interesting discussions, very interesting and very useful comments. I want to be, as the last speaker from the panel, to be a bit provocative and reflect on the contrast between the Anthropocene idea and the idea of nature. And I believe that the idea of the Anthropocene, the new epoch on planetary history, drives the idea of nature a bit further. I think if you really think this very carefully through, then the Anthropocene idea means that there is actually no nature. There's no part of the globe that is not dominated, managed, regulated, threatened by humans. So in a sense, the meaning of Anthropocene is that the human species has taken over the entire planet. And I think that's a very important conclusion. There are lots of books out there that postulate the end of nature, the end of the environment, the end of wilderness. And I think it's very important also for governments to accept this knowledge that we as societies and especially the governments are now, in a sense, in the charge of the planet. And this raises a very important normative question. I give you one example that you're all familiar with. It's a 2-degree target of the climate convention and the climate discussions. And I think it's very striking to see this target. It's the first time, in a way, that governments in the United Nations context have agreed on a temperature target for the planet. I mean, there's some debate about whether this is too much or too little as a target, but the fact is that the United Nations member states have agreed on a temperature target. And I think this is just the beginning of a normative debate about how we want to live with our planet. And I think this is a very important distinction to think about the Anthropocene in these terms, because humans are not part of nature. Humans are important. Humans are the driving force on this planet nowadays. And I think this puts a much higher importance, a much higher responsibility on the governments of this planet to work on this on these issues. And thank you very much. Happy Mother's Day. And as Kermit the Frog used to say, it's very difficult to be green. Thanks a lot for inviting me. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Bierman. And now a minute of concluding remarks of wisdom from Dr. Bodeau.
Thank you very much. I have heard many important statements from delegates and representatives of NGOs. It is encouraging to hear such wide support for harmony with nature. I would only like to emphasize that achievement of harmony with nature and human life in cadence with the rhythms of nature requires the empathy and compassion of the heart, as well as the rationality of the head. As Plato and subsequent philosophers have admonished, only the rational nature of the soul in relation to the sentiments generated by the heart, such as empathy, compassion, and love for nature, can control the selfish appetites of humankind, the greed, the materialism, the consumerism, which are actually threatening the fragile harmony that exists between humankind and nature. A chestless society is a poor augur for the survival of human life. But we must remember that nature will live on. We will not. To engage the sentiments of the heart requires education in the arts, the humanities, as well as the sciences. An education as holistic as nature itself. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Bodeau. And I would like to turn to Mr. Garrison. And unfortunately, if you could keep it to a half minute now, that would be wonderful. Thank you so much.
On our farm, we have principles that we live by, and I've shared some of them with you today. In your body, in your deliberations, in your leadership, I think that relying upon 4 years ago today in Bolivia was the delegates at the conference there voted in the Universal Declaration of the Rights of Mother Earth. And I have these in my longer printed comments. But it seems to me that that really serves as a basis, that if you understand that as a foundational principle, that then it becomes much easier to work forward in the day-to-day policies that you need to pull off in benefit of the inhabitants of Mother Earth. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Gerritsen. And then for our last words of wisdom, we would like to hear from Dr. Falcone Benitez. Thank you so much.
Muchas gracias por este enriquecedor debate. Creo que más allá de las acciones individuales con las cuales no podemos estar en desacuerdo, creo que nadie de los que estamos aquí, es importante también pensar en las acciones colectivas. Y en ese sentido, creo que la industria de la energía no está invirtiendo de manera significativa en energías renovables. Al contrario, está destinando parte de sus beneficios a nuevos proyectos relacionados con combustibles fósiles que implican alta demanda de energía y explotación mucho más acelerada. Y por eso mi insistencia en que Naciones Unidas asuma el concepto de emisiones netas evitadas para combustibles que se dejan de extraer y quemar en el planeta. Gracias.
Thank you, and I would like to thank all the panelists for their important remarks today. As it's been mentioned several times, we're at a critical juncture right now with the planning of the post-2015 development and climate change agendas. And the words that we've heard today will help lay the foundation for creating a new structure of an implementation of Earth-centered governance that will bring us forward to the future. So I thank the panelists, and I also, again, thank the Plurinational State of Bolivia for sponsoring this important dialogue. Before concluding, participants are invited to remain seated for closing remarks by His Excellency Michel Tomo Monte, Vice President of the General Assembly, on behalf of the President, and Mr. Thomas Gass, Assistant Secretary General for Policy Coordination and Interagency Affairs, on behalf of the Secretary General. The panel is now concluded. Thank you, and happy International Mother Earth Day.
We shall now continue with the interactive dialogue of the General Assembly on harmony with nature. I would like to express my appreciation to all participants for their invaluable insights and contribution to the deliberation on the promotion of a balanced integration of the economies, social and environmental dimensions of sustainable development through harmony with nature. I now give the floor to Mr. Thomas Gass, Assistant Secretary General for Policy Coordination and Interagency Affairs in the Department of Economic and Social Affairs, who will deliver a statement on behalf of the Secretary General. You have the floor, sir.
Merci, Monsieur le Vice-President. Excellencies, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen, I'm pleased to deliver the following remarks on behalf of the Secretary General. Each year,
On Mother Earth Day, we reflect on our relationship with the planet that supports us. The air we breathe, the water we drink, and the soil that grows our food are part of a delicate global ecosystem that is increasingly under pressure from human activities. From tropical deforestation to depleted ocean fisheries, from growing freshwater shortages to rapid decline of biodiversity and increasingly polluted skies and seas in many parts of the world, we see the heavy hand of humankind. As our population grows, we have to recognize that our consumption of the planet's resources is unsustainable. We need a global transformation of attitude and practices. It is especially urgent to address how we generate the energy that drives our progress. Burning fossil fuels is the principal cause of climate change, which increasingly threatens prosperity and stability in all regions. This is why world leaders have pledged to reach a global legal climate agreement in 2015. Action on climate change presents multiple opportunities to reset our relationship with Mother Earth and improve human well-being, especially for the poorest and most vulnerable. Sustainable energy for all can increase health, wealth, and opportunity for billions of people, as can climate-smart agriculture, more efficient cities, and better managed and protected forests. To generate ambitious action on the ground and raise momentum for a new climate treaty in 2015, I am convening a climate summit in New York on 23rd September this year. I am inviting heads of state and government, along with private sector and civil society leaders, to showcase initiatives and forge alliances that can help launch a sustainable future. But they need support and encouragement, for change is never easy. So today, on International Mother Earth Day, I appeal to all people everywhere to raise their voices, speak out on behalf of this planet, our only home. Let us care for Mother Earth so that she can continue to care for us as she has done for millennia. This concludes the remarks of the Secretary General.
I thank you, Mr. Assistant Secretary General, for these concluding remarks. Excellencies, Assistant Secretary General, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, as we come to the end of this interactive dialogue on harmony with nature, I am pleased to deliver a statement on behalf of the President of the General Assembly. At the outset, allow me to express my appreciation to the permanent missions of the plurinational state of Bolivia and Ecuador for their efforts to put these important issues on the agenda of the General Assembly. I would also like to thank our moderator and panelists for their informative and enlightening presentations. Today, many of you voice concerns about the consequences of increasing environmental degradation and express a sense of urgency to take decisive action. The discussion brought forth many interesting experiences and ideas, suggesting how we can work towards restoring a harmonious relation between Earth and its inhabitants. Our dialogue will certainly be an important contribution to our ongoing work to balance the economic, social, and environmental dimensions of sustainable development, particularly in the context of the elaboration of the post-2015 agenda. In the coming weeks, A summary of these discussions will be distributed. However, on behalf of the President of the General Assembly, I would like to share a few highlights from this morning's debate. We heard about Earth system governance as a way to forward sustainable development in harmony with nature. It implies going beyond environmental legislation to a holistic policy making approach involving all populations, including indigenous people, women, youth, and people with disabilities. We also heard that philosophy, arts, and religion can contribute to a better understanding of the relationship between humans and nature, supporting the work of scientists and informing political and social decision making. The benefits of organic farming were highlighted. Emulating the natural rhythm of Mother Earth through a crop rotation and a seamless integration of livestock and crop production, organic agriculture focuses on long-term benefits. Organic farming seeks to preserve the quality of soil and to produce nutritious and healthy food. Yet, we also heard concern over many political, legal, and economic challenges. The importance of collective actions as well as political will was also underscored. We need to change both our behavior and our way of thinking if we are to build equitable, fair, and sustainable societies respectful of the environment. Excellencies, these discussions remind us that there is abundant evidence that our world is currently running an unsustainable course. As we consume the natural resources of our planet at such rapid rate, we not only compromise the health of our environment, we also jeopardize our very own well-being, as well as the future of our children. The elaboration post-2015 framework is once in a generation opportunity to turn the tide. We must seize the momentum and define a new paradigm that integrates in a balanced manner the economic, social, and environmental dimensions of sustainable development. I hope that today's dialogue will inspire all of us in our efforts to craft an ambitious post-2015 agenda that will ensure a better future for mankind and our Mother Earth. Thank you very much. And the fourth interactive dialogue of the General Assembly on harmony with nature is now concluded, and the meeting is adjourned.